Well, that's the song that we play whenever Wendy's been away for several days. It's called, the title of this song is Wendy's Been Away a Couple of Days, and now she's back. Welcome back, first of all.
Thank
Was it
you.
Fun? You had a good time, didn't you?
Had a great week in Nashville. Very hot.
Nashville's a hot city.
And I tried Nashville hot chicken for the first time in my life. This place called Prince's.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Chicken Shack, formerly known as Prince's.
As Prince's, right.
It's hot.
Everything's hot.
I mean, they have mild, medium, hot chicken, double hot, and triple hot. And I think only dragons can eat triple hot. Because the hot was like...
That was your limit.
I mean, you had to try it, you know, while you were there, but wow.
Yeah.
I like flavor.
Right.
You know, forgive me for that.
You're substituting molten lava at that point
right,
for flavor.
Right.
And is that in your taste bud's best interest?
No.
Because even when you have that, there's nothing. There's been a couple times because I'm sensitive to really hot food, and people go, oh, you got to try this. You got to try this. And I'll have it. And then no matter what you try to neutralize it with, it just doesn't work.
It doesn't. And we were in the hotel. I brought it back. And it was funny because it's a little tiny chicken shack, Prince's Hot Chicken.
Yeah.
And my son, I went with Michael, and we got a number. We walked in, and I think our number was 72, and they were on 34.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, this is going to be a wait.
But then, you know, it's got to be good, because why would the locals hang out
right.
in a place like that if it wasn't great? So that's a good sign,
it
really.
It was. But then, like, 40 minutes later, and Michael lost track of the number, and he said, should I go up and ask him? And I'm like, no, it's like the soup Nazi in Seinfeld.
Right.
You have to obey the rules, yeah. or they're going to kick you out, and we're not going to get our hot chicken.
Yes. Yes.
So we just waited and waited and waited, and then our tongues were on fire.
Remind me, because I've been there a couple times, but it's been years. Is that the food to have when you're there? Is that what's considered to be Nashville's favorite food, or does that vary from place to place?
It's a lot of barbecue.
It is.
We did some catfish.
Yeah.
Celebrity sighting in Nashville, which was very exciting. There's this little shop called Two Old Hippies.
Yeah.
And it, I believe, started in Colorado, and they moved their store to Nashville, and it's really great-looking hip clothing. Which, did your daughters dress you today? Because you look very nice.
No, this was my own doing. I call it shirt and pants.
He cleans up nice, doesn't he?
Yeah. But they have really hip, like, you know, you're in Nashville, so a lot of performers will go there and buy, you know, some, like a suit coat with flames on it or something.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But then there's...
And it's all, is it vintage used stuff?
No, this is all brand new
and
very expensive. Like, you know, a little tank top was like $83 for a woman. So jewelry and clothing, and then they have this...
$83? Although they're still on Confederacy money there, aren't they? So that's like, is that $20? That's about 20, right? Translated?
Yes.
You'd think they'd advance, but they haven't really.
And so looking around, then there's this little small guitar room with, Kevin, what's that thing called with the pie tins on it? A guitar with pie tins all over it?
A Dobro or a resonator?
Dobro.
Yeah.
Michael was playing a little of that, and I'm like, how much is that? That's so cool. He's like, $750. I said, it's not that cool, really, when you think about it.
Like, what would have been the right amount where you go, well, let's get you
couple
that.
Hundred.
Yeah.
So then there's a bigger room, and the guitars in there are like anywhere from 2 to 8,000.
Sizable.
So we're in there, and there's a guy sitting on the couch playing this beautiful riff, and we have to take a break, but I have to tell
I'm
you the celebrity
to find out
sighting,
who it is.
And I talked to the celebrity.
Can I ask one quick question first? Is it somebody who is a celebrity today, or is it somebody that was a celebrity years ago?
Both.
Years ago? Oh, really? All right.
Current musical celebrity.
Past and present celebrity.
Guitar player.
All right.
Not from Nashville, but a guitar player. That I bet everyone listening would know.
Is it Maynard Thumbtwanger?
Oh, my God.
Did I ruin it?
Yes.
I didn't mean to ruin it. All right, we'll find out who it is in just a little bit. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I have returned from Nashville. I am finished sweating. Took a shower. I'm all fresh.
You'll find a way here to sweat at some point, too. It's not the same kind of heat as Tennessee heat, but believe me, before the summer's over, you may break a sweat.
I will glisten.
Will you glisten?
Yes, I will. But that was your little key. I don't know if you heard that little... I
saw who it is?
A musical celebrity at Two Old Hippies, this great little shop that has a lovely guitar area. And there's some dude sitting on the couch laying down some beautiful acoustic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I look up And I'm like, God, that's who that is. And then he talked, and I could tell who it was.
Texters are guessing a myriad of names, but the one that's coming up the most often is Adam Levine. But it's not Adam Levine, is it?
No, I wouldn't have really been that excited about him.
No? Is it Earl Scruggs?
I think he's dead.
He is.
He did the Beverly Hillbillies
yes,
theme.
Did.
And, that would have been that's a great guess.
That'd be weird, but it's a guess, all right?
Funk 49.
Is it
Eagles.
Eric Clapton?
No, oh my God, I wouldn't have returned.
That would have been good.
I would have thrown myself at his feet and said, I want to be your new Layla.
Is it Chris Partridge?
Either
the first
one?
The first one or the second one. Brian Forster or Jeremy Goldblatt.
I have to say I missed your goofy-ass trivia.
It's neither of them.
No.
Hmm.
James Gang, Eagles.
Is it Don Henley?
No.
Don Trump?
No.
Don Trump?
No. Joe Walsh.
It's not. No, tell me. I'll get it. Is it?
Joe Walsh is just sitting in old hippies in the guitar room on the couch, honestly, laying down some beautiful acoustic stuff. And
the door is drafty. Did he say anything like that?
He still sounds like that because it was weird because Michael knew he was in there. And I was, I said, well, I'll go in and I'll introduce you because I've interviewed him before.
Oh, heavy,
and
yeah.
He's friends with Steve Dahl. I've worked with Steve. So I walked in there and I acted like I was looking at the $4,000 guitars. And I was asking Michael questions like, oh, what is this one? I was just trying to act inconspicuous.
Yeah.
And then when I heard the playing, I kind of looked. And then I heard him talking and say, I don't know what she got any gum. How you doing?
Sounds always like he's had too much to drink. But
always.
But it's not that case.
No,
that's
he's
just
been sober for
pattern.
A long time.
He just has that vocal pattern.
So I look up and I'm like, oh, my God.
You're Joe Walsh.
I said, Joe Walsh, Wendy Snyder, worked in Chicago radio for a long time. I know you know Steve Dahl. I worked with him, and he was very cordial, very nice. And then I said, this is my son, Michael. He's here for a blues camp, 17 years old, and he is honored to meet you. And I wanted so badly to, could I get a picture?
Sure, why not?
I didn't do it.
Oh.
Something's happened to me.
Very strange. I'm surprised to hear that. And did he remember you at all?
Yeah.
Did he remember himself at all?
No.
He did not.
No.
That's not good.
And it was just like I wanted to take a picture. I wanted to ask him to take a picture, but in my mind I'm like,
you didn't want to bother him.
No, he's just shopping.
Right, sure.
It's, you know, it's one thing if you run into someone backstage or something.
Right.
But I felt.
Did you offer to go in on a guitar with him, like to timeshare a guitar? Say, here's what we'll do. You have it in January and February. I'll take it in March and April, and we'll figure out the rest of the year from there. I would have just suggested, because those are very expensive guitars.
They really were.
I would have thrown that out as an idea.
Yeah, I don't need a guitar. Michael would have loved to have had it, but I just wanted Michael to get a picture with him, and I didn't know how to ask. Backtrack about a month ago, Father's Day, Michael was playing at the House of Blues back porch lounge. I see Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And I'm about ready, and he looked at me, I looked at him, and I know he said to himself, oh, crap, she recognized me. And I was going to say, oh, my son is playing. Why don't you check him out? You know, maybe he could be in the Blues Brothers 12 movie.
Right.
And then I didn't say a word. And I just feel like these celebrities are out and about just enjoying life.
So let them be.
Yes.
That's very big of you.
Yeah, but now I'm regretful.
By the way, this guest just came in. Two guests just came in. 773 wants to know it was Joe Walsh that just came in.
No.
No. And this one just came in also. Is it Garth Brooks? Is it Garth Brooks, Wendy?
No, he has friends in low places, though.
Yeah. All right. It was Joe Walsh.
But I wish I would have asked, hey, is there any way we could take a picture? Because then he could have said no.
Right.
But
then that would have been more damaging because then you would have went, wow, he was just sitting there playing a guitar. He could have taken a quick picture with me.
I just didn't know what to do. And then when I was checking out, I collect bracelets. So I bought a bracelet and Michael bought some kind of clothing.
Not say what it is?
I don't remember.
All right.
He bought a Who shirt.
Oh.
I mean, we could get that here, I guess.
Right, yeah,
but, you know, And he bought some book, Albert Collins, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I didn't pay attention. I just paid for it.
Right.
So the woman who was checking us out said, did you see Joe Walsh? And I said, yeah, it was great. And I said, how cool is that? Do you get a lot of celebrities? And she said, last Sunday, Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders was in here. And I said, did you talk to her? And she said, no, I wasn't here, but I heard she was a little, and I said, standoffish.
Oh.
She said, a little bit. And I said, they're just shopping.
But you know what?
It's not fair to approach them.
Nashville's still a huge recording hub. Like, that's
Mecca.
Where people go
Mecca
to record.
Mecca, Mecca, Heine, Ho.
So it's not that unusual that stars, and it's a big city, but it's also kind of a small town.
Right.
So if you're in the music industry, there's a handful of places you're going to go. I bet that they see stars there all the time, I would imagine.
I know. And then it's like, so what do you do?
Did you have your picture taken with the counter girl, the girl who checked out the stuff you bought?
I didn't think of that.
You should have walked away with some picture.
Why can't you travel with me?
Take a picture of that girl.
Damn.
Well, we have celebrities come by the studio from time to time, and they're always very good about the pictures. You can get a picture with somebody famous. It won't be Joe Walsh. It won't be Chrissy Hynde, but you'll do okay. You'll get somebody.
I just wonder if that's the right way to act. I mean, if you run into a celebrity...
You could ask, right? In the past, you've asked, and sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no.
No, I'm kind of shy when it comes to that.
You've never asked? You've never seen somebody famous and said, this will take 5 seconds. Can we just get a quick picture?
Ethan, the guy who played SpongeBob... He gave an autograph to the kids.
Yeah.
That was awesome, by the way. The SpongeBob,
was the
musical.
Show good?
Oh, my God. It was so awesome.
Yeah.
I've had a great week off.
Yeah.
But now it's back to work. And then I realized this isn't really work. I am lucky to be here with you.
No, it's easy. It's easy. All right. We have a huge show for you today. Tim Ryan will be with us. A Man in Recovery Foundation is his work. He'll explain later. We've had him on in the past. Great guy.
What about Zorn?
Eric Zorn will be here.
The feisty one?
He will be so... You won't recognize him. He's so feisty right now. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thank you. On behalf of America, we thank Ryan Burrow for the news.
America.
Remember all the talk about the presidential election? They're
no,
still
who's
doing
running
it.
This year?
Well, you have Donald Trump from the television.
Really?
Yeah, Donald Trump, and then
how
Hillary
long have
Clinton.
I been gone?
Oh, it's been a while. It's
Can
been a
I
long
tell
time.
You about the Hillary Clinton thing when there was the press conference and the FBI was making a statement? I thought for sure they were going to say she was going to be indicted. At the very beginning of how it started.
Yeah, it started with a kind of a sombery tone to it.
Yeah, like, here's what we found, a bunch of the emails on this server, here's this, here's that. But then they went on to say that we wouldn't prosecute anyone else who had done this.
Right.
And then before I knew she wasn't getting indicted, I'm thinking that is exactly why Bernie Sanders stayed in the race.
Oh, interesting.
Because if something happened to her.
You got to have a fallback plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always been that rumor that Joe Biden's been kind of hanging in the weeds,
sure.
ready to jump in if need be. But
he need be. Please get Joe Biden on the phone.
I wonder if he is regretting his decision to not run, because it wouldn't have been a sure thing. But with all the problems, to put it politely, on both sides.
Right.
Well, but he may have split the Hillary vote and then Bernie Sanders may have. You know, I mean, we saw how this worked on the other side. I mean,
right.
You know, the more people that are in, you know, it kind of changes the scope of the competition.
Yep.
Boy,
yep.
Look at how small the clown car got now, though. Remember? I mean, it was like this whole election process has been like a complete surreal dream.
It's not over yet. It's going to get weirder and weirder. The convention is coming up. Now, Ryan, you're not going to the convention, right? Andrea's going.
Andrea is going. I will be here or wherever I am needed.
Okay. All right.
Good answer.
Well, you're going to be needed in many places. Just know that.
Disaster could
break out at any moment.
Working on the clone device. Sometimes I need to be in three places.
So there's a lot of speculation, as you would imagine, as to who Donald Trump will choose as a running mate, a vice president. And who Hillary Clinton will choose as a vice president.
I'm so curious.
Well, I've been saving this for you because I wanted you to hear it with your own ears. There's a guy, a senator from Tennessee. His name is Bob Corker. And Bob Corker, while you were gone, suggested that he believes that one of the better options out there would be Ivanka Trump. That's Donald Trump's daughter.
This guy from Tennessee? I wish you would have told me. I would have
gone to
slapped
his house?
Him. What?
Yeah.
Ivanka Trump, his ex-wife.
No, his daughter.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, Ivanka.
His daughter. Ivana's his ex-wife. One of his ex-wives.
What's Ivanka's, one letter?
Right.
All right. Ivanka is smart and bright and pretty and has a great clothesline.
Yes, she does. Let's play Bob Corker's comments. Now, this was at the end of the week last week as to why he thinks Ivanka Trump would make for a fine running mate for Donald Trump. Listen to this.
His best running mate, by the way, would be Ivanka. I know that wouldn't pass muster probably, but I don't know that I've met a more composed, brilliant, beautiful in every way person.
Yikes.
Sounds like he has a crush on her more than anything else.
He scrawled that on a notebook while staring at her. Doesn't it sound that way?
What's his name?
That's Bob Corker. That's the Corker. It would not pass, as he pointed out, it would not pass muster or mustard. No, don't.
Ivanka.
Don't.
With a heart around it.
Don't. So that's what he says. He says, "How you're looking for a running mate, look no further than the girl behind you, your daughter, that's your best running mate option." So then the people over at Fox and Friends, and they haven't had any scandal at all at Fox and Friends, Wendy, while you were gone. Please don't think they have. They kind of weighed that as an option. They kind of discussed whether or not Ivanka Trump would be a good running mate or not for her father. So listen to how well. Now, I don't know, in this clip, Kevin, did you also get her brother? One of her brothers is weighing in it. You didn't get that part? All right. This is just them and what they've decided as to whether or not Ivanka Trump would or would not be a good running mate.
She's got the beautiful looks. She's smart. She's smart, smart, smart.
She's 35?
Hey, she certainly got my vote. And she'll just be 35. Her birthday is right at the end of October, right? So she just makes that by about, 7-8 days.
And she definitely has the business sense. My gosh, every store amazing. I go in, the shoes, the jewelry.
Isn't that what we want in a vice president, though, is a vice president that brings good shoes and good jewelry?
God.
I think that's what we want, isn't it? At the beginning of that, by the way, that was one of her brothers explaining that she has his vote if she's going to run.
Well, I would hope so.
Right? He was undecided. Wait, my dad's running for president? Oh, my sister's on the ticket? Yeah, I'll vote that way then.
I guess. All right, that is unbelievably... Are they out of programming? I mean, and I was wondering about the 35 too, because I know you have to, the one thing I remember from the Constitution test is you need to be 35.
Well, they always taught us that I have to say, maybe I just only kind of remember this, but they always stressed the fact that to be the president of the United States, you had to be 35. I don't remember them ever mentioning to be vice president. However, as you know, you're always a heartbeat away if you're the vice president from being president. So I would think it precludes the fact they would need to be 35 also if you're vice president.
I thought
material.
It was for both. I thought it was it for Senate,
sense.
For anything,
it
for any
sense.
Political office.
I kind of like this idea. The Trumps bring their family. Clinton's got their family. You just the Clinton, 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 Trump, Trump.
Bush, Bush. We already had that. I am sick of these families.
She's got the fashion. She's got the shoes. I don't know why anybody would want anything else in a vice president. As long as, because that's the first thing I look for in a vice presidential candidate. What are their shoes like? Are they dressed smart?
Can I tell you that shoes make an outfit? Shoes make a man.
If not VP, maybe Commerce Secretary.
Why not?
I mean,
why not?
She sounds like she's got the skills.
Am I dreaming? Is
no.
this whole thing that's going on a big dream?
But doesn't it? It sounds like one of those things you would do as it, like, how Saturday Night Live would do a skit where they have the people from Fox and Friends discussing whether or not Ivanka Trump. That's what it sounds like, but it's not a skit. It's real life. It's them going, we hadn't really thought about it, but that is a very fashionable young woman. Very lovely. We should really consider her.
United States, a person must be at least 35 to be president or vice president. 30 to be a senator, 25 to be a representative. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's in the U.S. Constitution.
And that part about having any experience at all, that's nothing, right? That's not important at all.
No.
Because I kept thinking to myself, okay, Donald Trump has experience running businesses, and I guess you could say the same thing about his daughter. She does play a very large role in his empire, but the difference between running hotels and casinos and running the country is so huge. It's not even close.
But the more I will chat with anyone who will listen to me.
Yeah.
So on vacation, I would run into people at the pool or whatever. And there are so many people that are voting for Trump. They don't like him, but they don't want any more politicians.
Right.
And I agree in that respect that it could either make things really terrible or really great. But it's a non-businessman who isn't Trump. That's what I want.
Remember, though, this is what we also had here in Illinois with Bruce Reiner.
Bruce Reiner.
Oh, yeah.
And how's he doing?
A businessman.
You know, I mean,
mixed reviews.
You know,
it's been
a struggle. From our perspective, I think he's had to have a learning curve, and I think Donald Trump would as well. The government doesn't quite operate like a business, and so there's a learning curve there. But you know, on the other hand, too, if you're the one in charge, you might be able to pull government to operate more like a business.
Wouldn't you say, no matter who gets the job, there's going to be a learning curve? Nothing can prepare. What could possibly prepare you to be the president of the United States unless it is already being the president of the United States? There's nothing.
And you need tact, though. That's the difference. To be in a place, Bruce Rauner deals with other states. Donald Trump, if he were to be our president, will have to deal with other countries. And you have to have tact. You have to have some kind of social grace and not just say, well, if you don't do it my way, then I'm going to take my country and go home.
Yeah.
That's the frightening part to me.
It is frightening.
If it's just running the country, you know what? Honestly, I know this is going to shock you, I'd say give him a whirl. Can't get any worse. But when you deal with the foreign policy, that's what scares me.
I've heard so many people over the last year or so explain the fact that there are so many checks and balances in place, and I believe this to be true, that one guy can't just sit in that chair and screw up the whole country, that because of the way our system works, there's so many checks and balances that would fix that. However, there is the tact factor that you talk about and the perception factor of what we're like around the world, and that's frightening to me.
You put Barack Obama, whether you say he's, you know, whether you're going to blame him for whatever.
Do people do that? I haven't seen that at all.
I got chocolate when I ordered vanilla. Damn Obama.
Obama.
But to say that he represents our country well in a social grace type of way.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Tact.
I know.
That's what
there.
Donald Trump doesn't have. And I don't imagine him getting more polished. Right. I mean, he is who he is, and that's his whole platform.
Well, they've been saying for weeks or months now, is the Trump that we're seeing campaigning, is that the Donald Trump that would be sitting in the office if he was elected? And I tend to believe it would be, because there's little to no difference. I keep seeing clips of him showing up on shows from 15 and 20 years ago. He'll show up on Donahue and stuff like that, and you go, that's kind of the same guy he is now. He looks a little bit older, but his attitude seems to be the same. He's not going to change if he wins the presidential election. He could go more bonkers on us.
Bonkers, that is it.
I am starting
a Facebook page.
I found the word.
This country's gone bonkers.
We've gone bonkers. All right, a quick break. Your thoughts, if you like, at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. I'm trying to think what you missed while you were gone.
I tried to get unplugged a little bit, but I was aware of the Cubs fan falling.
He fell out of the bleachers during the rain delay the other night.
Yeah,
that was ugly.
Some sad video to watch because he wasn't moving.
Right.
Of course, all the police shootings.
Yeah, that's been the top story everywhere.
Victims of police shootings and snipers shooting police, which I mean, what has happened to this country?
Good question. It's been a little dicey the last couple of weeks.
Really scary, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all I know about.
I was telling you off air a little bit about what's going on at Fox News with Roger Ailes, who runs Fox News. Gretchen Carlson is saying that she was treated rudely, extremely rudely, that there have been some
sexual harassment,
yeah,
like verbal harassment, yeah, or
mostly verbal. But then other women at Fox News and other places that this man, Roger Ailes, have worked have also said that they can vouch for that was the climate by which they worked with him. And I told you, I worked for him for a summer years and years ago. He had a network called the 18 Network on cable, America's Talking, and their goal was to do a 24-hour network of all talk shows, 24 hours. And I worked for him for a summer. And I never met him, but the people that I worked with, some of them loved him. And he really, say what you want about Fox News. I'm not a fan of the way they do it, but he really invented something there. He really said the way news was always done was it's going to be kind of a little bit of everything. You're not going to know how the network or how the newscasters really believe. We're going to keep things neutral. And Roger Ailes said, no, that's not how we're going to do it. We're going to let them know
give
what side
opinions.
We're on.
Yeah.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing? You decide. But he was an interesting guy. He still is an interesting guy. So we got to wait and see what happens there.
Who's the late guy who worked here that I cannot remember his name that I had lunch with who ran this place?
Matheny?
Yeah.
Evil Matheny?
What was his first name?
Evil.
No.
Yes, it was.
I can't.
Lucifer? Satan?
No. Pat Metheny is a musician.
Kevin Metheny.
Oh, that's right. I had lunch with him. When you were here before, I had lunch with him and found him to be an interesting chap.
He was an interesting chap.
He was very nice to me.
Yeah.
But there were some inappropriate things said, but it shouldn't happen, but it does in this business. And I guess I'm kind of, I don't take offense to it. In radio, honestly, it has been inappropriate for my 30 years on the air.
Right.
At some point, there's somebody, and it's just kind of like it's part of the business.
You know what's sad is, I bet no matter what, if you had five people in a room who were a part of any business, I would guarantee you that there's been a bit of that going on in the industry. I mean, you and I know radio mostly because that's what we've done the last several decades. But I bet if you had chocolatiers up here, I bet if you had people who have made windmills, I bet whatever they were, it's awful. But I bet that that's part of doing business. It shouldn't be that way, but I guarantee it is.
But I've never felt pressured to, I don't know if Gretchen Carlson is accusing him of, like, hey, if you do this for me, I'll keep you here.
Well,
because I've never had any of that. It's just inappropriate behavior. I'm usually behind most of it.
Read the things she says about him and read the things that other people who have worked for him have said. And then there's this compilation video that's on YouTube of her on air. You know, she was part of Fox and Friends for years.
Never watched that show ever in my entire life.
So you're not missing that much.
But
is it Fox and Friends that she was a part of, or is it another show over at Fox News? I want to say it's Fox and Friends.
Did she anchor her own show? I think she had her own show.
Yeah, after the one that she was part of an ensemble, they gave her own show for a little bit. But they show her and her two co-hosts, and the two co-hosts are constantly, and this is on air, they're constantly taking ribs at, you know, the way she's dressed and how sexy she is. One of the guys calls her a skirt during one of the things, and she goes, "Uh-oh, we're gonna have to talk to PR, HR." But you can tell every time they do this. If you watch the video of it, every time they do it, she just rolls her eyes like, "Oh, here we go again. I got to take this one more day from these two guys."
Well, that's something I wouldn't put up with.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
That's degrading, and she should have stood up for herself and said, I'm not going to take that.
Well, there's one scene, there's a couple of these compilation videos, and in one, she walks off. She's just like, all right, you know what? If that's the way you're going to be, you do the news. You just do the show. I don't want to.
Yeah, but she came back.
And then she came back, right.
Because I've never had that inappropriate stuff. I mean, you know, you just hear things and it's like, wow, you know, I don't think you'd be saying that to your wife right about now.
Right.
But it's in the work atmosphere, you're right. Everybody does it. There's always, you know, kibitzing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my first Yiddish word of the week.
You did well with that. That was great.
But that's okay. But if somebody is degrading you like that.
Yeah.
That you don't take.
Well. Anytime I'd see these clips, and I'd seen these clips of them before, I'm not a regular watcher of Fox News, but I have seen the clips, and they're always very uncomfortable. And then I always say to myself, I wonder what their relationship, she and her two co-hosts, were like off air. I know what it's like on air, and she was always the target of them, you know, talking about her in various ways.
But all like womanly things that they did, pretty much?
Yeah.
Now I feel bad for her, but she had the power to say, hey, I'm not going to take this crap.
Unless she did go to her bosses, and her main boss at the time was this guy Roger Ailes. So if it's coming from the head of the snake, then
you
what do
quit,
you do?
Though. You
I
know? Guess,
yeah, you would hope. But,
I mean, God, I wouldn't take that. If you all of a sudden started belittling me, I don't mind you teasing me, which you do every day.
Yeah.
But seriously, it's not a man-woman thing. It's
just,
you know, goofing around and trying to press each other's buttons.
Yeah.
If it was all about, like, you know, sexy crap, that's
then it's
terrible.
Uncomfortable, isn't it?
Then she should have left. The fact that she stayed made it seem like it was acceptable.
All right. As this story played out over the last couple of days, I'm trying to figure out why would you stay in a job like that? And I'm thinking she's probably making really good money, which
too
doesn't
bad.
Make it right. It doesn't make it right. But then you go, if she says, I can't take this anymore, I got to get out of this, then will she able to find that kind of income again? And it's not, again, I'm not justifying it at all. I'm just saying if you're her and your bosses are also doing it to you, what recourse does she have? Who's going to side with her?
No, nothing. That's why she has
she
to quit and move on.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The fact that she stayed made it seem like it's acceptable.
Right. And it's not.
No.
It's not.
God, no.
All right. We need to take a quick break. We've got news. Ryan has the news, and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill Effen, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I have returned from Nashville in one piece, and I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to have this next guest on. Tim Ryan, a man in Recovery Foundation, going from dope to hope. Is that it, sort of?
From dope to hope, helping one addict at a time.
And, you know, in Nashville, I find myself talking to a lot of people at the pool and stuff, and for some reason, when I say I'm the mother of two teenage boys, heroin always comes up. Mm-hmm. Talking mom to mom, we're all scared of it.
You need to be. I mean, it's everywhere. DuPage County last year had 39 overdose deaths.
Jeez.
My son's best friend and one of my dear friends, Adam Silvers, being the 39th. I think they ultimately had 43 confirmed. There's been almost 40 deaths this year, and 22 of them are fentanyl related. The fentanyl is killing these kids left and right, which is 100 times more potent than pure heroin.
Tim, and it's mixed with the heroin?
Yep.
It is. We knew that heroin never totally went away. However, there was a period where it seemed like a drug of the past. It didn't seem to be something that we needed to be that concerned about. So what happened? Why all of a sudden did it come back to the forefront?
After Vietnam, the reason people's misconception is a person's got a needle in their arm, the homeless person, is they had to shoot it. The heroin was 15% pure. The heroin I can buy off the streets today is 50 to 75 to 80% pure. If it's cut with fentanyl, it's going to kill you, but it's easier for a kid today to get a bag of heroin or a prescription pain pill than it is a case of beer or a pack of cigarettes. It's everywhere. The cartels are flooding the streets. Marijuana will probably be legal in the next 5 years nationwide. So the cartels are growing the opium plants, yeah, the poppy plants, to produce heroin.
My general practitioner, my doctor, has two younger kids, and I went in for a physical. We were talking about things, and heroin comes up. It seems like it always comes up, unfortunately. And his theory, which I've heard from many people, is it starts with painkillers and opiates. And it's funny because our neighbors, we all have teenage kids, and we talk about locking up the liquor cabinet. But I think what's more important is to lock up the medicine cabinet.
You know, we just did a big event a couple weeks ago. Parents Matter and Kids Matter in Naperville, a big nonprofit, had a big campaign, Don't Be an Accidental Drug Dealer. And they had Linden Oaks, Banyan Treatment Center, my son Maxwell, my daughter Abby, Brad, Jessica, myself, Dr. Lott, a number of individuals. That's where it all starts. Kids are going into your cabinets, and if you had some extra Vicodin or Percocet from a surgery, they're taking those, sharing them with their friends, and getting hooked very, very quickly.
Which I am so guilty of. I had a knee replacement 10 years ago. I bet I still have the pills in my drawer.
Dispose of them.
I know. I've got to.
Naperville, you can walk right into the police station. They have drop boxes. A number of the communities do. You know, Naperville was one of the newest towns to start the Connect for Life program, where heroin addicts can walk directly into the police station, say, I want help. We'll put them into treatment. The Braidwood Police Department, Dwight's on board. Danny Langlois, who we started the second program in the country in Dixon, was at the White House last Wednesday. His program has put 90 people into treatment in a year, and I think 53 of them are still clean and sober.
I saw a movie a couple of weeks ago, and there's a scene in the movie where these kids play a game called Medicine Cabinet Roulette. And what it is they have a party at somebody's house. They just go into the medicine cabinet. They don't know what the drugs are. They just take them at random.
Who
I say
does
to myself,
that?
That's impossible, but it's not impossible.
It happens all the time, or it's called a Skittles party.
Yeah.
Where kids, Max, have you heard of any of this in Oswego?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely heard about it. Like kids will, they'll just go to each other's houses, and kids will just bring, maybe if there's different drug dealers, they'll bring whatever they have. They won't say what they have. If you can identify a pill, I mean, stay away from it. But, I mean, people, they'll just put them in a bowl. You'll just grab a handful. You'll just pop them.
And you know, it's even with
I am so naive. I'm sorry.
The kids today just think they're indestructible. It's not going to happen to me. I mean, 2 weeks ago Saturday, I attended my 90th memorial service since my son Nicholas passed away 22 months ago.
And so your son Nick died. How old was he?
Nick was 20 when he passed away.
And Max, you have lost a brother, and your father is a former addict. You've had a crazy life, haven't you?
I mean, yeah, I guess you can say that. I mean, it's not what a standard upbringing would be, but I mean, I'm involved in this, and I mean, I'm trying to be part of the solution. And when you're raised around this stuff, you see what it does to people, and you get a firsthand experience of how it can affect families and how it really can break them apart. I mean, Adam Silvers is one of my best friends. Of course, my brother, growing up, my dad was a heroin addict the whole time, so I didn't know what he was like sober. So,
did you know he was a heroin addict?
No, not until he eventually got charged with another driving unrevoked and went to prison for it. But I mean, growing up, we'd always have these Friday night movies, and he'd always be nodding out, and I just thought he was tired. I had no
from idea. Working hard all week.
Exactly. I'd have no idea that he was doped up, and so that's just who my dad was. I never knew him sober. He was always an addict.
What do you think hearing your son say that, Tim?
You know, truthfully, it tears me up, but, you know, Max now works for Banyan Treatment Center with us in Naperville, and on Father's Day, I woke up, Max moved in with my fiance and myself, and he had a note, and he had a bonsai tree, and he said, "Hey, Dad, if I could have got you a banyan tree, I could, but they don't grow in Illinois, so I got you a bonsai tree." And he said, "You know, you have helped shape me into the man I am today. And I'm blessed to call you my father." And I don't have the details, but I am so honored that my son is in my life. All my kids are, you know, I'm up at my parents' every weekend, just being able to talk with them. These are things I didn't do. Little Mackenzie, or my 10-and-a-half-month-old daughter, being able to raise a child sober. These were things I was not used to. I never did.
You were given a second chance, or a third, or a fourth, or which, how many?
You know, and what's real surreal, I now go into Sheridan Correctional Prison and speak tomorrow. I'm in there tomorrow, and I was in there last week speaking, and I'm on the hall. There's about 80 inmates, and there was a gentleman in there that I was in with 3 years ago. And I said, "Marquise, what are you doing back here?" And he said, "I was out 8 months. I caught another case." And as I'm speaking, I said, "You don't realize how instrumental you were into shaping me into the man I am today." I'm crying, he's crying, we're in a prison. Those are things I'll never forget, though. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just deal hope out here and offer guidance.
We're going to take a break, but I want to say your friend Marquise is back in there. You have to keep trying to get rid of this problem, don't you?
Absolutely.
One time may not work. 4 times may not work.
No, but, you know, I always used, relapse is part of the journey. BS. Relapse, you're either in recovery mode or you're in relapse. There's no middle ground. But changing isn't easy. I'm a creature of habit. That's why I kept doing, and I used it as a crutch and as an excuse. But that's where we try to guide and direct. And I don't care where people go to treatment, but once you get out of treatment, that's where you need to apply the tools to live in life clean and sober.
And just getting out of treatment, you have to do some kind of counseling, I would imagine.
Well, we're trying to get more people into it's detox, long-term treatment. Like with Banyan, we can keep someone in for up to 4 months. Mm-hmm. Then into a long-term sober living facility and learning the life skills. Don't let these kids come back home. Don't let them start earning their own way and having random drug tests and getting plugged in with people in recovery. We just did a bowl-a-thon Saturday night in Crystal Lake, and a few Brooktree and Banyan brought some of their clients there, and they have 150 people sober out here raising funds for a family that lost a child, so we can put a few more people into treatment. But you can have a great life clean and sober, but you got to work for it.
Tim Ryan here, a Man in Recovery Foundation. The website is amirf.org. Phone number to call if people need help?
Phone number is 844-611-4673, or you can call 877-722-0845.
More with Tim Ryan in just a little bit. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We are talking with Tim Ryan. What's your official title? What can I call you? A man who helps so many people?
A man in recovery.
That's it.
Great for recovery, an alcoholic and drug addict.
All right.
Title-wise, I'm Midwest Outreach Director for Banyan. I'm Executive Founder and Director of Man in Recovery Foundation.
Every time you're on the air, people like to call you a lifesaver, too.
You know, all I do is guide and direct, and I get that a lot, but I just guide and direct people and give them that nudge. And the reason I'm able to get through to so many people, man, I lived this for 30 years, you know, but I know when to pull in the clinicians to help or whatever we need to do to get someone into treatment. 90% of the people do not want to go to treatment, but once you get them in, 90% don't want to leave.
That's what I want to ask you. A parent that is recognizing symptoms and issues and basically knows that their kid is having an issue with drugs, if they put their kid in recovery, isn't the kid so mad at them?
Not at all. You know, you got to understand.
At the beginning?
Well, it depends on the age, and the kids are getting younger and younger. 14 years old,
what?
12 years old, 15 years old. You know, not just smoking a little weed here. They're doing pain pills. They're doing heroin. Xanax is a huge pill out there that a lot of people are abusing, and it kills you. But they need to have that talk, and they need to do something immediately. And they need to talk to their neighbors and their friends and drop the darn stigma. Your child has a progressive and chronic disease that's going to kill them. Why wouldn't you talk with
sure.
people about that?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't want the neighbors knowing. It's ludicrous.
That's how I met you.
Right.
A friend of a friend had said, I talked about my kids having ADHD because it's, you know, not a bad thing, and I want to make it open and able to talk about it. And she said, I think my kid may have had ADHD, was not medicated because I chose not to, and is now medicating in other ways, and he's a heroin addict. And I'm like, really? I said, oh, I'm so sorry. But it was exciting for me to hear someone admit that and not try and brush it under the rug, because how do you get help when you're hiding it?
And that friend of yours is a dear friend of mine, and it's just a matter of talking, and they come to our support groups. Their kid's actually back in treatment again. But it's okay. There's hope out there, but people need to do it. Too many people are dying out there.
I want to ask Max a question. Max, of course, is Tim's son. Drugs tore your family apart. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat that. They tore your family apart. They took your brother's life. You attend parties. You see these drugs. What's the initial reaction when you see kids using these drugs at the parties?
I mean, initially, it's just I'm kind of dumbfounded by how little they know about what these drugs can do. Because, I mean, awareness is really the key. And when I see kids, they're just popping pills. Just like they have no idea what they're doing. They think Xanax won't destroy their life, or they have no idea what's going on. So when I see this, it just blows me away
yeah.
how little they know.
And part of that, I mean, you know, I have younger kids that go to the Robert Crown Center, and they have a drug program, and they teach kids about drugs. You know, when we were growing up, it was like, don't drink alcohol, don't smoke cigarettes, don't smoke pot. Heroin was never mentioned. Really, cocaine wasn't mentioned that much either. Have these drug programs changed? Are they making kids? The DARE program doesn't help
that
much.
The DARE program was an utter failure. That's why, you know, we have the cop, the kid, the convict. Tim Ryan, motivational speaker. I take Derek. I take my kids. Detective Wistocki. A number of us go in and we provide solutions. This is real talk. So we'll speak to the students in the day. We'll do forums at night. But then for the families that need help, we're there to offer the help and guide and direct. Whether they need to go to an adolescent program at Rosecrans or Gateway or Linden Oaks or come to Banyan or Brooktree, it doesn't matter. But, yeah, you need to talk about this. People need to be aware of what's going on. And there's a number of events coming up that people can attend. This Saturday, Chris's Walk in St. Charles at Mount Mary Sinai Park. Annapalooza in Geneva at Templar Park this Sunday. July 31st, a Nick Isaac Ryan Memorial Skateboard event at the OG Skateboard Park in Oswego, Illinois. And we'll have a special guest appearance by Brandon Novak, who was dear friends with Bam Majera in the TV and movie series Jackass, former professional skateboarder and recovering heroin addict. He actually works for Banyan Treatment Center now out on the East Coast. We're doing a number of events together. You got the Streeter Overdose Walk on August 20th. Braidwood Police Department's doing a golf outing on the 5th of August to raise funds for our foundation. They want to start a drug turn-in program. Buddy's Purpose, August 27th in Centennial Park in La Salle, Peru. I'm in Canton, Illinois on August 28th. You know, things are just taking off. I spoke down in Springfield about 6 weeks ago to 55 rural hospitals. I've got more things planned. They don't know what to do in these small communities. They're getting these heroin addicts. The pills are awful, and they're locking the kids in jail. So we want to start some programs there to be able to guide and direct these people into treatment and get them on the right road and see what we can do moving forward with that.
Tim Ryan, a man in recovery foundation.org, AMIRF.org. Is that where people turn when, say, I know that there are parents listening right now that know their kid has a problem and maybe they don't have insurance. Maybe they don't even know where to start.
That's where we come in. You know, 300 people a month we probably assist getting into treatment. We have an office in Ringwood. We have one in Naperville. I've got 6 people that volunteer. A majority work with Banyan, but we do this just to help. No insurance, state insurance, good insurance. We can help you. But coming as of next year, you have to have at least state insurance to get into treatment. So they're changing things around. But yeah, we're the place to call and help. We run a number of support groups where the parents come with the addicts.
And that's crucial, isn't it, for
absolutely.
A parent or a sibling even
a
to
lot
come
of
with.
The, absolutely. A lot of the parents don't understand. Like Derek, I met Derek 2 years ago, and his mom attends our support group. Derek struggled a little bit, went through Banyan and a couple other treatment centers, and is back now working with us and driving me around and going to events and helping on interventions.
Derek, help me understand this because I don't. You know the price you can pay for drugs like this. So that first time or two when you were offered something, what made you decide when you knew it could possibly kill you, why would you still use these drugs? I don't get it.
See, when I was about 17 years old, I was already heavily, you know, smoking marijuana, drinking alcohol, messing with other drugs. But the thing about it is my inhibitions were already lowered. So the fact that somebody already offered me this next drug, I'm thinking in my head, well, why not? You
yeah.
know what I mean? I didn't perceive it as such a dangerous thing for me to do.
Yeah.
Even though the stigma behind it, the thing about it is I didn't really care. You know what I mean? Because I have this disease that tells me that, oh, I'll be okay. You know what I mean? No matter what, I'm going to be all right.
It's not
going
to happen to me. The other people die. I can control it, and then Pandora's box is open. And thank God Derek's mom was all over this, kicked him out of the house at 3 a.m. in the middle of the winter. You're gone. Okay, I'll go to treatment.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go when you get kicked out? And wasn't that just a slap in your face like you never expected that?
It was, but you know what? That's actually the thing that I needed. Because for me, when I have a bed to sleep in, when I have a roof over my head, food in the fridge, I have no consequences to using. And since my mom kicked me out, you know, That was pretty much my bottom.
That broke her heart, I'm sure.
Absolutely. But you know what? That's what I needed, because she needed to be strong enough to tell me, look, you're not going to live under my roof under your own conditions. It's my way or the highway.
You say that now, but how mad were you? How unforgiving? Like, how could you do this to me?
I was furious at the time. But you know, when I spent that night out of the house, it really hit me like, wow. This is what I keep doing to my family, and it's all on me. I have to stop looking at the outside sources, stop blaming other people, and finally take a good look at myself, put my hands up, and give up.
Yeah, everybody wants to blame. I needed to blame myself. I couldn't blame my parents, my ADD, my dyslexia. I'm the one that crossed that line, and I'm the one that's accountable for my recovery. Nobody else.
All right. Derek, how old are you?
22 years old.
How long have you been sober?
This time around, I have about 5 months clean in about 2 days.
Congratulations.
Good. Thank you.
Max, have you ever done drugs?
I mean, sure, I used to smoke pot when I was younger, but I mean, when you see what, to a certain degree, it's a gateway drug. I mean, my brother started out smoking pot, and I mean, things escalated. Now he's dead because of heroin. So when you see what it does, you got to put it down. You got to realize what's the right from wrong. Now I'm working with Banyan Treatment Center, and I couldn't be happier.
And you're 18?
18, yes.
Yeah,
sir.
Max does nothing now, and it's
good.
It's awesome. It's awesome. So another cool thing we have, I'm officially moving forward with my documentary series. We can't talk too much about it, but we'll definitely be on to give you guys some more information. And the whole premise is dropping the stigma, letting people know there's hope out there. And there is. There's a ton of hope. You know, we see it. It's like all the news. It's all negative.
Right.
We need the positive news network, and we're the positive people in recovery trying to offer hope out here.
You can't get help if you're not telling somebody about it.
Absolutely, and the parents have got to quit shame, guilt, remorse, drop it, pick up the phone, call, and ask for help.
People can get in touch with you. His name is Tim Ryan, A Man in Recovery, amaninrecoveryfoundation.org, AMIRF.org, and the phone number?
844-611-4673.
One day at a time.
You
Thank
got
you.
It. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Have a blessed
guys.
Day.
Thank you so much. We'll take a very quick break, and then Kim Gordon has the news for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Oh, that's some fine fiddling, Wendy.
Fiddling Around with Eric Zorn.
With Eric Zorn. That's the name of his segment. The feisty Eric Zorn joins us right now from the Chicago Tribune with some very good news from the world of music, most notably from fiddle and banjo playing. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how are you guys? That's my son Ben playing
at
the Midwest Fiddle and Banjo Championships. I was playing guitar. The guitar was really what held it together, though.
Yes.
I didn't even hear the guitar. I just heard the fiddling.
But he came in second place in the finals this weekend. He's beaten by a Danish fiddler.
Isn't it always that way?
No, those Danes coming over, they're taking our jobs and taking our trophies. No, he was the winner. Was
must have been a great Dane.
He was a great Dane. He was really terrific. So,
didn't you miss that?
Straight from the Westminster Dog Show.
And so anyway, but it was a great experience. I competed in the banjo contest and did not place. So
you did not. I'm sorry to hear that. You have in the past, however, right?
I've competed every year. Yeah. I competed in the fiddle contest a couple years ago, and 2 years ago I played, and my son Ben backed me up, and he's gotten so much better than I am now that he plays, and I back him up. So
you know what? You mentioned that to me off air the other day, and I thought that was such an interesting thing. Is that he's better than you at this, and you're thrilled about
totally.
That.
Oh, totally, yeah. That,
and you should be.
Oh, yeah. Because
you get to live through him now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you were saying your son won a contest last week, right?
Yeah, we were in Nashville, and they had a bunch of bands competing, and he won first place, and we were shocked. It was the Music City Commercial Music Extravaganza. And, you know, my husband had diddled around with guitar for many years, but seeing Michael play and play harmonica with the harmonica holder, Jim just kind of said, yeah, I don't really play anymore. Yeah. You know, let's just let him handle it.
No, I
he's
play,
proud. Too.
I like to play with him. I really do. It's really fun to play with him. And the fact that he plays better than I do is actually inspiring in a lot of ways.
So yeah.
It was really cool. It was a very, very nice event at the Old Town School, part of their Square Roots Festival. And
that does sound like fun. And I so, love the... The school.
Yeah, the school is great. But the fact that he was able, after just taking it up a couple of years ago, he's been able to make those kind
That's
of strides.
That's fantastic.
So it was really cool. And you were saying there was a funny moment when your son got his award. They called him up. And
oh, yeah. They said his name wrong, Michael McIntyre. And, you know, he said, oh, thank you. It's McInerney. So, you know, they corrected it. It happens all the time.
Well, I was saying that on ESPN the other day, yesterday, the woman who won the Women's Golf Championship. I think it's Brittany Haas is her name. And it's either that her name is Brittany and they introduced her as Bethany, which is what I
thought. Oh, no.
And they'd said it several times. Bethany, come on up. And she's like, are they talking about somebody else?
Oh, no.
This happens.
Even after winning a major tournament, they still are not getting the name right.
Hey, you know what? What I finally started doing this weekend was Facebook Live video. Have you guys done any of that?
I haven't done it yet, although I saw who filled in for me on Friday. I can never get her name right.
Oh, from the WGN TV News?
Yeah, what's her name?
Blah, 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 blah.
Right. She was Facebooking live in the studio and asked you how to say her name, which
right.
is...
It's pronounced...
And you messed it up.
I don't know why that's the funniest thing in the world.
Today is messing things up. But I decided to do it. I'd never done it before, but my phone is out of memory, so I can't take video wherever I am. So I decided I was at the Oak Park Farmers Market on Saturday morning. I said, well, I want to get some video of this. So I just said, I'll stream it on Facebook Live.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of went and figured out how to do it, which is like two steps, real easy to do. And I started shooting it, and hundreds of people see it then because it's on your Facebook feed, and it just keeps popping. I guess it pops up on your homepage,
right?
As it's happening, and then it stores the video, and people comment on it. It's just phenomenal, and I don't know exactly how Facebook is going to store all this video, but I took like three videos there, and then I was taking videos. I was at a concert last night down in Hyde Park. I was taking videos there, and they post online right away. And it's the kind of thing where you guys could do that here in the studio, or you could just have a feed going out live all the time.
Then they'd see us.
Yeah, but you guys are so good looking.
No, we like radio.
Old and decrepit.
But you're in the studio. Nope. People can walk by and
how come
see
I can't? You have to show me how to do it, and we'll do it.
We'll do it. Maybe doing the commercial. We can do 5 minutes after.
No, I'll be playing Pokemon Go during the commercial.
Yeah,
break.
We had a big conversation about that this morning at the editorial.
Love
board.
It. Playing
all
it.
All the old folks are going, what is this? What is this Pokemon? And the younger people on the board were explaining how it all works. And I guess it started on Friday. You guys
yeah,
already talked
started,
about this?
No, we have not discussed it, but it started
later.
A few days ago.
Well, this young
Wendy's
woman,
addicted to it.
Young woman who's the editorial board coordinator. She's a millennial. She's like 23, 24. And she was saying that she was at she had friends over to watch TV on Friday or Saturday night, and all of her friends were like looking at their phone the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, there's a squirrel in the room. And I guess that...
It's good because it replaces. Remember the thing that people used to do where they talk to each other.
No, yeah, but that's
it replaces
so.
Oh, that.
That's like so old school.
Seriously, though, we have seen so many kids in our neighborhood taking 40-minute walks. They're getting instead of sitting at home playing a video game, they're walking around
well,
meeting
walking
other
into
people.
Traffic.
This is what came up at the meeting, which was Liz, the woman on our board, and she was saying like, this is a good thing because she said my friends like they don't want to take a Lyft, they want to or an Uber, they want to get out.
Except
and
there's
walk.
Car accidents with people who are doing. doing it while they're driving, crashing.
Oh,
that's
into common sense. Bill. Oh, while they're driving?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't even think of that.
Driving. No, I thought it was just walking around they do this.
No, people are driving and they're holding their camera phones up and crashing into things.
Okay, well, first of all, don't do that. Second of all, watch where you walk, because I know there's been accidents of people walking into traffic because they're following the stupid Pokemon.
Right.
But it is, it's not one of these games where you sit at your computer, you sit in the dark and play. You're out moving around, evidently. I don't know. I have no idea.
I'll show you that during the commercial break.
Yeah. You've been playing? No.
I love my avatar. She's hot.
Yeah, no.
Doesn't look anything like
me. No, but it's the real world. So, you pointed at me, am I in the image and then the Pokemon comes and sits next to me?
No, he is.
No, Eric isn't in it. It's just like a street map. And you walk down the street, and when you see a Pokemon thing, you can click on it, and it tells you where to go. This says that there's a Pokestop not too far away, and it is the Plaza of the Americas. Do you know where that is?
Plaza of the Americas. Is that what they call this, the Pioneer Court now?
Maybe. I'll do that during the lunch
break.
Maybe
Pioneer forgot to pay their royalties.
Right. They lost it. They lost the naming rights. All right. We'll take a quick break. Eric Zorn is here. Boy, is he feisty. He can't help it. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill hates technology, I've decided. He is very annoyed with me playing the Pokemon Go game today.
He's probably annoyed with me because I've got you live on your Facebook feed.
Hi, everybody.
We have 20 people now watching you.
See, and they comment immediately. Bill is so, look at him. He's so irritated.
I like the time where some thought went into content. Like, just because something's being recorded.
Have you listened to our show?
with the exception of our show.
I was in here for
just because
rehearsals
something's
this morning.
Being recorded doesn't mean it's interesting, but this generation seems to have forgotten
I think that's not true. I think we now have 23 people watching and we're getting like thumbs up and stuff like
that. Right,
but
there's tens of thousands of people listening. Why give way to 20 people watching something when tens of thousands of people?
All right, can you stop it now because I'm out of memory on my phone?
It doesn't hurt your memory. I will stop it, but it doesn't hurt your memory. It doesn't take up any memory at all. That's the beauty of it.
Will you stop it?
I will stop it, yes. Finish.
You're right. Feisty.
What do you make
now
of...
it's on your Facebook page. Now the video's on your Facebook
It'll
page.
Be up there like forever so people can see it.
Forever, yes.
So
archaeologists will be studying
people from this. When beings from other planets come down in the future, they'll watch this video and they'll go, there's nothing there.
The
We're
Bill?
Just watching videotape. There's nothing to it.
This is where we chart the decline of civilization
from this moment on.
This episode of the Bill and Wendy Show.
Let's talk Dallas for just
a little
bit.
A little more serious. Absolutely.
It's just plain awful what's been going on. It's awful.
It's really awful. And one of the things that I proposed in my column on Sunday was that maybe we should rethink the idea of police pulling over vehicles for safety violations. I mean,
Can I just say one thing? I have so much respect for police officers. 99% of them are awesome and wonderful and helpful. There are a few rogue ones every once in a while. But if I was a cop, I would never pull anyone over fear of what might be in that car.
This is the thing. It is completely their job to enforce the laws that need enforcing. And you don't. And when I say, I think for these minor violations, the incident in Texas, Sandra Bland, the woman from Naperville.
That was a taillight too, wasn't it?
No, it was a lane change. That was she had changed lanes. And she said later that she had pulled over because she thought the cop's light, he was going by because she didn't think she'd violated any laws.
Right.
So she just pulled over quickly and he pulled over and said, well, you didn't signal that lane change. And it was just like, these are minor violations. And the thing is like, I don't necessarily blame police officers. They may be under pressure to reach quotas and so on. But if you've got a broken taillight, which is supposedly the reason that the guy in the St. Paul suburbs was pulled over last week, or there was the guy at the University of Cincinnati who was pulled over because he didn't have a front license plate, and that ended with him being shot and killed, that, you know, these kind of traffic stops, any traffic stop is like a tense situation for people.
Although a front license plate, doesn't that, maybe you think that might be a stolen car? A taillight to me is big whip.
Half the states in the country you only need a rear license plate. So, they pulled Timothy McVeigh over because he had no license plates. So that was a little different. I mean, if a car has no license plates, that's one thing. But if a car's got a broken taillight or doesn't signal
a headlight burned out.
I think there's a way to maybe take a picture of the license plate and send the person a fix-it ticket, you know, saying, hey, you get
this. But if they don't have a license plate, what are you taking a picture
of? Well, if they don't have any license plate, you got to pull them over. I mean, there's certain things. But it seems to me like this is something that the police could probably buy into, because I'm sure they don't like it. I mean, I've talked to cops before who just say, like, you know, it's a lot more of a stressful situation for us than you'd imagine.
Sure.
And of course, motorists are always nervous, and especially minority motorists these days feel like, they get the talk. Like, they've got to be really, really quiet and respectful, or else they feel like they run the risk of having an altercation. So,
but shouldn't you be respectful? Even if it's a bad cop, be respectful, do what you're supposed to do, stay alive, and then do what you have to do to take that cop down.
Well, that's true. And apparently what happened in the St. Paul suburbs last week was that the guy said, "I have a gun." He wanted to tell the police officer that he had a gun because he had a permit to carry it. And that then he reached for his license registration, and the cop thought he was reaching for his gun. Now, I think there's still some details about this story that we don't know. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And this ought to be something, I don't know if they teach it in driver's ed or not, but they probably ought to role play this. And for everybody, white, black, anybody, how to respond during a traffic stop. And that is, keep both hands on the wheel always. That's what I've been taught. You don't take your hands off the wheel until the officer asks you for something. And then you say, tells you, "I'd like to see your license registration." You go, "Okay, I'm going to get that now."
Why don't you step out of the car?
Oh, no, you're not supposed to step out of the car.
But why don't police ask you to? Because then they can see your hands. You can hide something in the car.
Years ago, I got out of the car.
So did I.
And they yelled at me. And they yelled at me, exactly. They said, "Don't
get back in the car."
Really? "Don't ever do that." Yeah, don't ever do that. And I think this is like, there are protocols you've got to follow for any stop. But I think that when you're pulled over for a taillight, everybody's tensions are really high. But I do like the idea of having this kind of thing drilled into people and everybody how to respond in a traffic stop, and for everybody's safety. And I don't think we teach that enough.
What do you make of former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's statement? He said this yesterday, that black parents need to teach their children to respect police. What do you make of that?
I wish that he had not stressed that it's black children. I think that black,
all
white,
children,
all children need to be taught. I mean, no matter what you might think about police, and I'm on your side when I think most, the vast majority of them are good, but you have to, even if they're bad, or if especially if they're bad, you have to respect them. And if you've got a problem with how they treat you, file a complaint,
videotape it, even
whatever. But you're not gonna win the confrontation. You're not gonna win that confrontation.
If you were a black parent, though, and believe me, I'm not defending Rudolph Giuliani.
Right.
If you were a black parent, wouldn't you honestly say to your kids, "Unfortunately, we live in a situation right now where the rules are a little bit different"?
I think they call that the talk, and I think that is something that it is. I've heard African American parents talk about that, which is like, you got to have the talk with your kids. Now, I've had that talk with my kids. Now, of course, my kids are not nearly as likely, I think, to get into those kind of situations. That seems to be the reality. But I've talked to my kids about, if you're pulled over, put hands on the wheel and wait for instructions.
Yes.
Roll down the window, but they want to see your hands.
Yeah.
And there was an incident years ago where a woman was shot and killed in Chicago because she was reaching for a cell phone. And people, and she was going to call and tell someone, "Oh, I'm going to be late." And she's like, and that puts everybody
on edge.
That's
why you should get out of the car.
No.
But I mean, I know we shouldn't. I'm not telling people to get out of the car, but maybe police should say from this point forward, don't you think they have a better view of someone if they pull you over and say, "Step out of the car, please." And then you're standing there. You can say, "Put your hand on the hood."
Yes.
I know, but shouldn't they say that? Don't you think that would help them if they said, they pull you over and then they say, "Please step out of the car, turn around."
Then you're dealing with somebody who has more of a power base because they're standing up.
Yeah.
When you're sitting down, you're very limited in your mobility. Yeah, you might have access to weapons, but your mobility is extremely limited.
True.
If you're stepping up, if you're standing up.
And you can't run.
You
can't run.
Yeah, right. I don't know how much of this is a part of driver's ed. You can have the talk with your kids, but this ought to be part of every driver's ed program, which is like almost a role-playing thing. Like, let's pretend that I pulled you over and you have no idea and you're late and you're irritated. How do you respond?
Right.
And the answer is, you respond as calmly as you can and you keep your hands where you can see them.
Because you might get off of your ticket if you're respectful. If you're a jerk from the start, there's no way.
Yeah, I think that's true, too. That all just makes sense. I've had some pushback from people saying that, you got to have the cops handling these safety violations, these small things. But I think that there's a way to use technology to address those problems. You don't want people, if their brake lights or taillights aren't working, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
But I think there's a way to deal with that without turning them all into traffic stops.
That's Eric Zorn.
He's
very feisty. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Amy Guth has coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff, and it's her, Wendy Snyder, back from a month-long vacation. How long were you gone? 5 weeks? 6 weeks?
4 days.
4 days?
You were off Monday, right?
Yes, for the 4th of July.
Did you have a lovely 4th of July?
Yeah. Yeah.
We stopped in Effingham, Illinois, on the way to Nashville, and there was a nice little gas station that had a huge tent selling fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we were in Kentucky by that point, because you can't sell them in Illinois. And thank God they had the sign up that said no smoking within 50 feet of the tent.
That would have been a
problem. You need to know you're at a gas station.
But, you know, sometimes smokers sometimes forget.
They're jokers.
And smokers are jokers, and they could forget, and then the world would explode. And then what?
I did see something in the news. There was some woman smoking while filling up her gas tank, which, why would you do that?
I don't know.
And some other woman took, you know, how they have the bins of water where you can wipe your windshields and
squeegee water.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She took the squeegee and kind of flashed it at her to hopefully put the cigarette out.
Yeah.
And so then the woman who was smoking put gasoline on the woman and said, I'm going to light you on fire. Needless to say, she was arrested. Girl, what is wrong?
You know how girls get.
I know. Now that I watch Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
Too much sex.
No. Wrong. You'd be incorrect in that assumption. I just received the news from our own Kim Gordon that the starters for the All-Star game have been named. Congratulations to Chris Sale, one of the greatest pitchers in all of baseball, starting for the American League. However, Johnny Cueto is starting for the National League instead of Jake Arrieta, so that's a little disappointing.
Why, though?
He's having a great year, and he is, I have to say. He's a very good pitcher, too. But I just thought, and this is selfish because we live here in Chicago, I just thought, wouldn't that be nice to see the White Sox and the Cubs each send a starter into the All-Star game? I don't know that that's ever happened.
Really? Never?
I don't think that's ever happened. I don't think so.
I'm glad it's a White Sox.
He's so deserving
Chris
of it.
Chris Sale is a good pitcher.
Yeah.
Although, who's the kid with his son that quit? Like, where is he now? We don't even remember his name.
Adam Eaton. He's the one who's still with the team. They've had so many guys named Adam in the last couple of years. They had Adam Dunn, yep. Adam Eaton, and this guy named Adam. Was Adam, I can't think of his last name.
I know. Name. Isn't that funny how
Drake
we all...
Drake is his kid's
right,
name.
Right. We remember Drake, which is sad for Drake.
Right.
Because he shouldn't have been raked over the coals.
Right.
But, like, where is he now?
In school, I hope. Well, not right now because it's summer. But eventually, I hope he goes back
to school.
He has
some time to make up.
Right. I'm surprised another major league team didn't pick that kid up. Aren't you a little bit?
I'm surprised he wasn't announced as one of the starters in the All-Star game.
That would have been something.
Is the Home Run Derby tonight?
Yeah.
I like watching that.
The Home Run Derby's tonight, and the White Sox will be well represented there, too.
Who?
Todd Frazier will be hitting home runs for the White Sox, we hope. He won it last year.
Really?
Yeah, he's very good. Very, very good. All right, I hate to bring this up. This is extremely serious, but it needs to be addressed. While you were gone, of course, we had the incident in Dallas, the catastrophe in Dallas.
The sniper shooting
cops.
Adam LaRoche, by the way.
Adam LaRoche.
Sorry, thank you, listeners.
Thank you, everybody. So it was an awful few days that preceded what went on in Dallas, and then the Dallas situation happened, and it was even worse. So now, not right now, but for the last couple of days, there's been a little bit of a debate because the shooter, the sniper, is a man named Micah Johnson. And he was in a standoff with police. There was a problem there in a parking garage, and they couldn't get him out.
He's young, too, right?
Yeah.
Like 25 or something?
Yeah, he's a younger guy. I don't have his age here. But the way that they finally got rid of him is they sent a robot in that's usually a reconnaissance robot. You know,
a Roomba?
A lot of times,
a Roomba or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's what they're called, isn't it? That sounds right.
Well, that's
right.
The vacuuming robot.
That's
the Roomba.
Robot. They sent this robot in that isn't usually... The goal of this robot isn't usually to exterminate somebody, but in this particular
that's
instance...
It's terrible to hear you say that, but that is what it
that's
is.
That's what it was. So there's a lot of people who were very upset saying it was an unfair way, even though what this guy was doing was horrendous.
Sniping at police officers.
Killing five and injuring at least six others. That was an inhumane way to go about taking him out.
Who is saying that?
There's a bunch of people. There's a lot of human rights groups who say it was an unfair way to go about doing it.
What, because we had an advantage because we had a robot to take him down?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think in extraordinary circumstances, and this was an extraordinary circumstance, they had to do something, and this was the option that they chose. And I know that there was no way for this guy to get out of this in one piece. The goal of that, the goal in this particular mission was to blow him up, and that's what they did.
If he wanted to live, wouldn't he have surrendered and come out?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was either going to go down at the hand of the cops that were shooting at him, or, I mean, please, he had to be taken down.
Yeah, I think so, too. Their argument, the people who are arguing this point, just say that there were far more humane ways to go about doing this. But I think unless you were there, and I don't know how much you were on vacation, so my guess is...
I didn't know a lot of it other than
what you
police officers were being sniped at. And taken down.
Things were happening.
Peaceful rally.
What started out as a peaceful rally. Yeah. So it was all happening very, very fast. And there was a lot of moments of just utter chaos because they didn't know if there was one shooter or four shooters. They didn't know exactly what the motives were. It was just, there was so much going on in a very fast amount of time. And I think they made a judgment call. And, you know, you could argue one way or the other that it would have been better to get this guy out of there alive. But
no.
At some point you go, well, that just obviously isn't going
to
happen.
And didn't he forfeit the right to be taken out alive?
I believe so.
Somebody texted poor robot, #robot lives matter.
Oh.
Good God.
It says, in the wake of the shooting, this is from CNN, in the wake of the shooting of the Dallas police officers Thursday night during a peaceful protest, police cornered the shooter, Micah Xavier Johnson, in a parking garage. After an hours-long standoff that included exchanges of gunfire, they then used a robot to deliver an explosive that eventually killed the gunman. So why did they use it? It said, we saw no other option but to use our bomb robot and place a device in its extension for it to detonate where the subject was. This is Dallas Police Chief David Brown speaking at a press conference.
Kudos to the Dallas police for getting that robot in there as quickly as possible.
Right. See, I think so, too. And I'm surprised there's been as much talk the other way. You got
a guy who's
already shot and killed police officers, and the situation, honestly, could have been even worse. Nobody wants to see anybody die, don't get me wrong, but this was a bad guy doing bad things, and the police had to make a quick judgment call, and this is what they decided.
You have to stop the bad things from continuing. This was the only option.
Right.
I've got an update on the robot. Are you getting to that or no?
There is. Well, let me read a little bit more, Ryan. They said other options would have exposed our officers to grave danger, and you have to keep that in mind because of how tentative a situation and a dangerous situation they were right in the midst of. They had to do something, and they had to do something fast. Right?
And this is way faster than I would have imagined to get that robot in there and effectively take the guy down.
The system had been reported as a Northrop Grumman Robotech Andros, which is a remotely controlled bomb disposal robot commonly used by police, military, and other first responders around the world. It is wheeled, and it weighs around 485 pounds.
Wow, that's a big robot.
That's a big robot. And it mounts various sensors with a robotic arm with grippers. What's your update? I'm curious what you have as the update.
You know, the robot was actually purchased in 2008. This coming from ABC News. It was purchased in 2008, so, you know, it's about 8 years old. It was bought at the time for just over $150,000. Now, this is the interesting part. There was some damage to the robot arm, but the robot itself right now is still functional.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine you would think that they're built to maintain quite a bit of shock. Because they're so expensive, they don't want every time they detonate something. Although I believe, Ryan, these are primarily used overseas, you know, in war situations, right? I don't think they – I'm trying to remember who we had on from ABC News that day, but I said I don't remember one of these ever being used within our country to take out a potential gunman. And they, to their knowledge, Who was it, Kevin? Yeah, do you remember?
I believe
who
it was Aaron Katursky, correct? Yeah, no, and that's what everyone seems to believe. I mean, everyone kind of, when we heard about it, we said, oh, that's how it was taken out?
Right.
Or that's how, wait a minute, what? How?
Yeah, it seems a little foreign.
And so then the research began. Has this been done before? Obviously, a lot of drone use, but never anything quite like this, especially something in the United States before. So, you know, there's going to be a whole nother legal battle that goes along with this, because the question is now, usually when something, you know, when an officer discharges his or her weapon, they're taken off duty.
Yeah.
Right? And now what happens? Was it the officer who was in charge of this robot? Are they taken off of duty and questioned? Is nobody taken off duty and questioned? So there's going to be new legal procedures that will go into place, too, I'm sure, as a result of this.
Do we have this robot here in Chicago?
I don't know that.
That's a great question. I mean, they've got quite an arsenal of, you know, I don't want to make light of it, but I mean, toys essentially to work with in situations like this. We've seen hostage standoffs not only in Chicago but in the suburbs where, you know, robotics have been used. You know, more along the lines of camera use, to try to find out where the bad guys are inside of a building.
Right.
Perhaps someone maybe
taking
hostages.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they've been used, I think, in Arlington Heights. They were used in the South Suburbs a few months ago. So we know that those have been used. As far as being strapped with any kind of device, not that I'm aware of.
The other thing, well, let's take a quick break. There's more questions about this and hopefully some more answers. If you want to jump in, and I see people already lining up, we're at 312-981-7200. We're talking about the robot that was used to take out the shooter in Dallas the other day, Micah Johnson. Give us a call or a text at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We are talking robotics, and I asked Ryan Burrow a question that I really would like to know the answer. Dallas police used a robot, a 475-pound robot.
485-pound.
You're going to quibble about Ted Brown.
Yeah, well, he's trying to lose weight.
Are you calling him fat?
He's trying to lose weight.
Those it's extra batteries.
Yeah.
He was charged. He was fully charged.
I'm wondering if we have one of these, because there is no question that this sniper should have been taken down. And as you told me off the air, again, I was out of town, and Steve Cochran mentioned this morning, I guess, someone texted, that negotiations were ongoing. So they gave this guy an opportunity to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
He was prepared to not make it out alive, I'm assuming.
See, one of the other things to keep in mind is he was claiming to have set up explosives in downtown Dallas. And they were trying to determine at the time, A, if it was true, and B, if it was true, where exactly those explosives were. So they didn't want to kill him. They wanted to get some answers from him and find out if that was true, if he really did plant explosives. It turns out he didn't. But they at the time, that was a very real concern. So
and
they
wanted to take him alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very much so.
But at some point, you can't leave a sniper in a sniping position.
Right.
Got to be taken out. And
there's also reports that he wasn't of full faculties at that point. He was laughing about what he had done. He was singing songs. He was not cooperating. It was not your best situation.
All right. 312-981-7200. Hey, Danny, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on. Go on, Danny.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it was a bad situation, but all these police people, they want to hurt, you know, you can't hurt anybody. This guy killed how many people? He didn't care. Would you want another innocent person killed?
They did not.
I agree with you. I mean, I can't.
You know, and all the people that were protesting the police when the bullets were flying, they ran behind the police for help. Come on.
Right.
Hurt people.
So, Danny, you believe the police were well within their rights, correct?
Well within their rights. Well within their rights.
Yeah.
You know, he even asked for a black negotiator, and they gave it to him. They did everything they could to get this guy out of there, and he wasn't coming out. You know, he was going to kill himself and take some more people with him.
You got to remove the threat.
Yeah, and if there was bombs, they wanted to get out of there if they know if there were bombs anywhere. You know, you could sit there and talk to this guy for 3 days. Nothing could have happened.
You're right. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks
for calling. Somebody wants to know if the Dallas police can invoice this guy's next of kin for the cost of the robot, which was, you know, it's still workable, Ryan mentioned, but I'm sure it needs some repairs.
A little bit of damage. It cost $151,000 when they bought it back in 2008.
Wow. What a great investment.
Wow.
I wonder if they thought it was then, back in
2008,
yeah.
You know?
You know, another thing you missed during all this is there were pictures of a guy wearing a camouflage T-shirt and walking around with an assault rifle, And for much of Thursday night, he was suspect number one. He was the one that everybody said, here's a guy that was behaving erratically. He's walking around with a rifle. He seemed to be in the mindset of doing damage. And it turned out, his own words, that he realized that people could take this the wrong way. So he surrendered his weapon to Dallas police officers. So this guy that they were looking for, and I'm doing that thing where I'm switching from channel to channel. You saw his face everywhere. Whoever took the pictures of him obviously made some deal with the various networks to get this picture out there. And rightfully so. He did seem to be a person of interest at the time. But then as it turned out, this guy wanted to make it very clear. Believe me, I'm not the guy.
Part.
His brother immediately called. I think it was CNN at the time. His brother called up and said, hey, that's my brother. Believe me, he's not going down there to shoot anybody. But he was walking around with a rifle.
Can't you do that in Texas?
Yes,
though?
You can. It's not like it is here. You know, we have a concealed carry state, but Texas is not like that. You can carry your weaponry right out on the open, and he was. But that might not have been the night to do it.
Was he attending the rally?
He was attending the rally.
He was part of the march, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody said every time I go on vacation, something happens. When I went to Orlando, and Ryan, you're in on this too.
Yeah.
All the tragedy happened there, and then I never even take vacations. Now I started taking them, and I'm in Nashville, and then this, and there were reports that there were other snipers set up in various cities, and Tennessee was mentioned as well. It's scary.
Those reports were a little iffy. You know, that's one of those things where they were called into places, but there didn't seem to be much validity to it, thankfully.
Thank God. Yeah. Well, let's continue talking about this. We're going to take a break, do some news with Ryan, 312-981-7200. I find it shocking that any specific group is saying this is an inhumane way to take down someone who's just killed and injured how many police officers?
He had killed five and injured at least six others.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Crazy world we live in. I, honest to God, really feel sometimes like, is this really going on?
It's really going on. It is. All right. A break for news and then more of your thoughts on this at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks. We've been discussing some of the events of Thursday night. This is the night that the five Dallas police officers were shot by a man named Micah Johnson. Dallas police then decided to employ a robot with an explosive device to essentially blow up Mr. Johnson. And there are some groups, some people that are very upset, saying that this was an inhumane way to take somebody out, that it didn't leave him much of a chance. And let's be honest, he didn't deserve much of a chance.
Well, but to be honest with you, I think the prosecutors would probably have liked him to still be alive right now.
They would.
They would love to have him behind bars and continue to pepper him with questions and find out a little bit more about the mindset, maybe if there were other people involved. So I'm sure, you know, when they made that decision, you know, it's not one that the prosecutors or the police probably wanted to make at that time, but maybe had to.
It was probably their most desperate option, and it kind of had to be done in that given situation. I hate to say it, but it kind of did. Here's a question. This, again, is on CNN as they look back on Thursday night and what went right and what went wrong. What robot was used? As I told you, it was a Northrop Grumman Robotech Andros. It said, why is this being reported as a big deal? This is the first use of a robotic system by the police in a deliberately lethal manner. That's the question that we asked the other day of ABC News, because I didn't remember ever hearing of that before. Are there parallels or precedents by the police? Robots are used all the time by police bomb squad forces around the world in bomb disposals. They're also frequently used in surveillance roles by SWAT teams. We had mentioned that. They have been used in standoffs with armed gunmen in a variety of examples, from helping to figure out where the gunman is hiding to delivering pizza to the gunman.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Can I just tell you something? If I'm holed up somewhere and all of a sudden a pizza box rolls in, I'm not going to open that box.
Right.
Oh, how nice. They're giving me a pizza.
It's the Pizza Bot 3000. they've been used with hostage situations during negotiations when a person wasn't allowed in, but none of these involved delivered lethal force, as happened on Thursday. The closest parallel that we're aware of was a case in 2011 when police in Tennessee strapped tear gas grenades to a robot and then accidentally started a fire in a mobile home.
Oh, God.
This doesn't seem like a great parallel, but it does reflect a decision deliberately to use a robot to kill. Another parallel would be a 1985 standoff back in Philadelphia between law enforcement and the group called MOVE, M-O-V-E. Manned police helicopters dropped two small explosive devices on the roof to try to open a breach in the building below where the group was bunkered. Instead, the building caught fire, killing 11 people in the blaze and burning down many neighboring buildings. Again, the parallel isn't a perfect one. While it did involve a bomb, there was no robot, nor was it a deliberate use in the way authorities used the robot in Dallas. So that's part of the biggest criticism is people who have said in the days that have passed, the few days that have passed, that the police didn't offer any kind of a chance. This robot was sent in to do one thing and one thing alone, to kill this guy. And yes, but there was some, there were long negotiations prior to this, hours long negotiations that were not going well, and the police made a snap decision. And the other thing that I wondered back that night, and I'm still wondering today, is what the protocol is, because this had never been done before. Whose decision was it? Is it strictly the chief of police? Is it whoever's on hand right there at the scene?
It's whoever's in charge at the police station.
I would think it would have to be, because this is too big of a move, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't just. They had to get clearance. It probably, you know, they had to bring it in.
Yeah.
It's not like it was in the back of the car, because, the head of police would have to make that decision.
I would imagine. So is that, does that become one person's decision, or is there a deliberation of all the higher ups there? I don't know. This is such new technology. I don't know what the protocol is for something like this.
You know what, though? If you hear about this protocol, obey the laws. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but this was a guy who, at that point, obeying the law wasn't part of the game plan.
Well, he was a former, he served in Afghanistan, a former military.
Yeah.
I mean.
Who they said was well-schooled on this sort of thing. And he was very efficient, unfortunately.
And maybe a little messed up from what he had seen in Afghanistan, too.
There's a good chance of that.
All right, I cannot find these groups. And, John, you had some questions, too, about who is opposed to this robot killing.
Do you have, Wendy, sometimes, not to cast any aspersions, but, because I really enjoy your guys' show.
All right, get to the butt.
Who are those people who you said there's a group or people that are...
Go on, Wendy.
No, I didn't say that because I can't find these groups.
All right. On cable news, they were calling them human rights groups, but nobody was being...
My goodness, we use drones. We use, all these other things. Five, police officers were massacred. And I'm appalled that somebody may object to, oh, my God, the problem with, eradicating this murderer was, I just blew me away. And I would love to chat with these people. I would love to talk to them and say, what's your problem with this? My God, five fallen Dallas police officers are already down.
Right.
How many more is it going to take?
Right.
We have the technology. Let's do it. Get this guy done.
At that point on Thursday night, after he had already killed five, they already knew five police officers were dead and six were in critical condition after being shot. What's the difference between using a robot to get rid of this guy, or if they had a sharpshooter or a sniper to take him out? Is it that dramatic of a difference? I mean, the end result is he's no longer with us.
Yeah, but from what I'm understanding is people are saying, oh, it wasn't a fair fight, and nor it shouldn't have been.
No, I mean, probably not. Why would it? Would you need a fair fight at that point?
Well, when I was in Vietnam, and the American Sniper movie came out, everyone kind of, calls these snipers and whomever, heroes, and they weren't. The guys, that could shoot, 500 yards or, 1,000 yards away and not get into combat, But with Dallas, it's enough is enough. Just eradicate this guy. And I'm, like I said, Bill and Wendy, I'm just tremendously surprised that someone would object to this. What kind of bleeding heart are we talking about? Of course, there would have been great individual intelligence involved
with getting this guy.
Sure.
You know, motivation, a lot of that. But you know what? Enough is enough. You know, God bless these five officers.
Yeah.
You know, geez, Louise. Anyway, that's my rant. I love you guys.
Thanks,
I think
John.
You're the best on radio. And have a great day.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Appreciate
a little more information. This, according to NewYorkTimes.com, the Dallas police, as we've mentioned, ended a standoff with a tactic that by all accounts appears to be unprecedented. It blew him up using a robot. In doing so, it sought to protect police who had negotiated with the man for several hours and had exchanged gunfire with him. But the decision ignited a debate about the increasing militarization of police and the remote-controlled use of force and raised the specter of a new era of policing. The Dallas Police Chief, David O. Brown, said officers had used one of the department's bomb robots, attaching an explosive device to its arm that was detonated early Friday when the robot was near the gunman. Other options would have exposed the officers to grave danger. But the decision to deliver a bomb by robot stunned some current and former law enforcement officials who said they believed the new tactic blurred the line between policing and warfare. Mm-hmm. It does, kind of.
Oh, it totally does.
I mean, you know, if we're having people being shot wrongly, what if police now use these robots and they bring a robot in and explode someone and they're like, oops, he wasn't armed.
Yeah.
It just changes everything. I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying that's where law enforcement officials are. Some of them are saying this is more a military effort than a police effort.
I wonder, and I can't find this anywhere in, excuse me, in this CNN story, and I looked up another story and I couldn't find it there. I wonder if at any point during all this on Thursday night, if the police said to Micah Johnson, look, we're at a standstill and we have to do something and we have to do it now. We have a robot with the technology to essentially blow you up. You don't tell him, do you?
No, because then he's going to be looking for something. The element of surprise is gone then.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know for a fact. But
I wonder if that would that make it any more humane to say, look, this is what's in our arsenal, a robot that could just blow you to bits. So you either stop this and stop this now or we bring in that robot. Do you do that or do you not even bother?
I say you don't bother.
No.
So, Trevor, you're thinking the same thing. Some of these police officials are shocked that the police used a military effort.
Hey, guys. First of all, I mean, you get this all the time. You're my favorite show on GN. Very professional.
Thank you.
Yeah, I read this story. I'm 22, and I was just astounded how, like the world has been moving, especially the U.S. I was telling the screener, I'm not political at all, but, like, I feel like part of this has to do with Trump and just the world, the U.S. getting more angry and more like, yeah, we're just going to, like, blow everything up, and that's going to solve the problem. And some people would, like, say, okay, yeah, like, what, so, like, is that just going to have a bunch of, like, is he just going to keep picking off people one by one with, like, snipers? Like, what's the end solution? But I don't think the end solution is to bring in a military weapon and blow the guy up. I mean, that goes all over press lines. You know, children are hearing that, like, that's just not a precedent that the U.S. needs to be in and, like, have. And I just feel like when I heard that, I was like, really? Like, they blew the guy up with a robot? Like, I took a couple steps back, did some self-reflection on it. I was like, just really? I don't know why more people are just, like, with me on that. But
well, first of all, Trevor, as much as I don't like Trump, I can't blame this on Trump at all. It's too hard. It's too big of a stretch.
There is a bunch of angriness, though.
Well, yeah, but
that directly blame it on it. But I think that he is, in the greater scheme of things, is the reason why everyone's getting so riled up and raged for no reason.
Oh yeah, I understand that. But in this particular instance with this guy, Micah Johnson, I don't think that their goal when all this began, I don't think they were hoping to blow this guy up. It sadly ended up that way. But think about this. If they had let this go on longer and he keeps shooting at police officers and had killed a couple more, then wouldn't the debate have been, look, they had the technology to throw in a robot at him and get rid of him earlier. They didn't do this and he killed four or five more cops. You would have had a different story.
And if they had snipers, if the police snipers were out there and he got up to make shots again, they could have taken him out. I mean, they knew he was there by this point. Mm. I get what you're saying, Trevor. And at first when I heard about it, I'm thinking, well, kudos to us for coming up with a way to end this active situation. I do understand your thought. I still feel like he's forfeited any right that he ever could have had.
Yeah, I can see both sides. I just feel like once this robot now comes, 5 years from now, what is it going to be? We're going to have, like, you know, police going to have little mini drones flying up and just boom. It's just like one thing leads to more and more and more, and that's what worries me when, like, I hear stories like this.
It should worry you. It's worrisome.
I'm 22 years old. I'm young. I'm a young adult. I'm a junior in college, and I hear these, and it just keeps going. Georgia shootings, it just keeps going on. One story starts off, and then people just follow. People love to follow people, and it's just they need to just really just, I don't know. It's sad, though.
Terrorism doesn't come from just places abroad. Terrorism is happening right here in our own country.
Trevor, we have to take a quick break, but we appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Yeah. Really appreciate it. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got plenty more calls and texts. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're talking about the robot that was used to take down the sniper in Dallas. I was reading something from the New York Times. Some former police officers were saying that this might, using the bomb robot, might have been an excessive use of force and that it has set a precedent, adding they were concerned that other departments across the country could begin using that same tactic. The further we remove the officer from the use of force and the consequences that come with it, the easier it becomes to use that tactic, according to someone at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and a former counterterrorism expert.
All right, here's a hypothetical for you. You're in a similar situation to this. You pick the city anywhere in the United States, and there's a gunman who's already done damage and has the ability to do more. So if your two options are send in a robot that's not going to get killed, no matter what he does to the robot, he's not going to kill the robot, or risk the lives of how many more police officers, it's an option that makes sense. Yes, it's an inhumane way of getting rid of that guy.
Is it inhumane?
But it's fighting inhumanity with inhumanity. What he was doing was inhumane. It's inhumane to go up to the top of a building and shoot people dead. So if he was being inhumane, why can't you use inhumane against him?
And, you know, it's not like they just came in and surprise, took him down, which I don't even think I'd feel bad about either. But they tried to negotiate with him. They gave him the option to surrender. He chose to say, no, I'm not going to go down without a fight. So I don't know what the answer is, but Pat, what do you think?
I increasingly get more frustrated every day with what happens in this country, and I would like to make just a couple of points. Number one, with regard to the police becoming more paramilitaristic and everything else, they are responding to an ever-increasing militaristic public that is better armed and more brazen and with much more lack of respect for the police and authority in this country. The second position is, you know, we're worried about being humane. Let me ask you a question. If you were being threatened by somebody, your life was being threatened, would you sit there and contemplate, well, I have to defend myself in a humane manner in order to not get repercussions with regard to what I've done to this person? No, I think you're going to protect yourself or your family, whatever it is, in any means possible. And for those of us that have grown up in this country, and I'm in my 60s, and have seen this disrespect for authority and police just escalate further, I think there's things wrong both in the home units, the family units, as well as in our schools. When I was in school, we were told policemen were our friends. Now, there have been corrupt, sadistic, and bad police ever since the Roman legions were conquering the world, okay? Peacekeepers, whatever you want to call them. But they are a minority. They need to be culled out of the good group. And I don't want to see any more police officers killed, okay? Whether they're good or bad, the good ones stay They do a job that we wouldn't want to do. I would not want to walk around today with a badge and a bullseye on my back as a police officer. You couldn't pay me enough to do that. And I respect these guys, and I respect everything. And I think that our schools need to start teaching this again, as well as the parental guidance in the home units. And I'm sorry, I believe that our young man, Trevor, who is the future of this country, I think he's got a valid point. I respect its opinion of it. But I believe that he may have not experienced enough of life yet to get fed up with what the heck is going on. And I'm sorry. Those are my opinions. I'll listen.
No, thank don't you. Be sorry. That's all right.
Pat, they were great. Thank you very much. And we're running a little late here. So, Robert, I'm going to put you up because you have the opposite side, and I kind of agree with our last caller. And go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's so many angles to a lot of these stories that's going on with all this madness. I think to begin with, the police officers, I think the bad ones need to be weeded out. I consider that as your lawn. You got your nice grass and you got a weed. Do you cut over it or do you pluck it from the root? Because if you don't pluck that weed from the root, it's going to continue to grow throughout your grass and make your grass look like crap. So these officers that are all the bad ones out there doing the bad stuff need to be put out. Zero tolerance. They cannot, the good cops cannot stay quiet anymore. They have to start speaking. They have to start telling, because they're the ones that are truly in the field of that line of work, because they do want to protect us. They do enjoy that type of work. They are against, you know, the criminals. But it's the bad ones that they keep getting that pass. And it's like, again, I refer to the grass, because if you're just going to mow your grass and just say, oh, I'll just shave it over the top, I'll just cut it. But you're not solving the problem. And the problem is you have to pull that from the root to continue the grass to grow and green and beautiful. And the police officials that are out there, if they're not making the effort to say, okay, this is what's going to have to stop. Because look where we're at now in these days.
Robert, let me ask you a question real quickly. We had Ernie Hudson on from the Ghostbusters, and remember he said he was coming out of a hotel and cops like slammed his head to the ground because he was a black man. They were looking for someone. They just assumed. And I know that happens, but then he went on to say he's told his kids, unfortunately, this goes on. So when you do get pulled over, be extra good. And don't you think that would matter? I would understand. I'm not a black person, but I understand if you get pulled over and these cops are not being, they're not giving you a chance to talk, they're not listening, wouldn't you just still go along with what they say so there is no doubt that you're going to remain alive?
There is. I mean, I have a family member of mine who, he's from the city. He has a license to carry a gun. He's a young guy. I'm Hispanic. He's a young guy, family, and he has a license to carry a gun. I begged him. I said, you know, can you just leave that at home? Leave it at home. Don't even mention to the cop that you even have the card. Leave that at home. I was to protect my family from who? Do you understand the statistics, the stats on a police officer that's retired from being a cop for 30 years, whatever, plus, and has never had to pull their gun out? If we look up that number, you'll see, and that's the problem with this country. Everybody's this whole thing with the Second Amendment that I'm so nauseated in hearing. The Second Amendment, protect my family. Protect your family from who? There's people that in the South Side, if you go in the South Side, I would probably guarantee 95 of those people that live there don't have guns, that live there. The ones that do have guns are obviously the thugs. But you don't see people throughout those homes that live in those areas saying, oh, we all have guns. It doesn't work. That system doesn't work. That what happened in Dallas was the most unfortunate thing that ever happened. How do you avoid that? Why does that man needed to have an AR-15? Who needs an AR-15? Who in Christ? I mean, it is amazing to me to know who in their right mind needs an AR-15. Why? What is the big necessity for everybody to have this? Oh, you know, now it's concealed carry. Everybody can carry a gun. Yeah. Is it working? Is that working?
Robert, you mentioned a great point. The few bad cops have to be plucked from the rest and removed. And otherwise, the few bad ones are bringing down the whole police force, it seems.
But you don't know who the bad ones are until there's an incident. There's no way to predict.
Because they've been protecting each other.
I'm sure the guys, those officials out there that do see the signs, you know, they do see them. And I know it's hard because it's all, you know, it's the brotherhood and
right.
all that. But that brotherhood is not working for us anymore. The times have changed.
Absolutely.
That system no longer works. It no longer works. I mean, this is where we're at now, where it's just, you know, the police officials have lost respect for the community. I think that's something that's brought upon themselves because they've allowed that. You know, it's almost like your kid. If you allow your kid to be disrespectful once, and you allow it the second time, and you allow it the third time, and you allow it the fourth time, before you know it, what is that? What's going to be the outcome of that kid to be respectful for you in the future?
Yeah, exactly.
And they won't be respectful. So,
Robert, we got to run. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Very valid.
Appreciate it. All right. We appreciate all your calls, all your thoughts, all your texts. We really do. We'll take a quick break. Ryan will give you the news, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, I know I've been gone for a week, and, you know, I know you had a lovely week with some fill-in guest hosts.
We had over 400 people fill in for you in the days you were gone. Everybody got 5 seconds. Everybody in town got 5 seconds.
Well, and I know I'm annoying you today because I'm really into this stupid Pokemon Go. Can I tell you, my boys Michael and Dylan, this happened when I was in Nashville. This
game
became available.
Right.
And the kids kind of got into it. They took the dog for a walk last night and were gone for 45 minutes because they were walking around playing it. And I'm like, what in the world is
right.
this? And Michael said, Mom, you know, you should download it and play it because I'm sure everybody's going to be talking about it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him for giving me show stuff.
He found a trend.
Yes. And then, Ryan, you... I tried to assist you.
Yeah, I just got ghastly. And by the way, the realtor plaque that's across the street right now, that there are a lot
it's
of...
It's a Pokestop?
Yeah, Pokeballs are there.
All right, now you're going to have to translate a couple things. Number one, Ryan, you just said
now.
The phrase, I just got ghastly. Explain what that means, because that has more than one meaning.
He's one of the Poke monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to go and collect all these monsters from various locations. Now, this isn't virtual reality. This is augmented reality, which means that it's using your current surroundings, real life,
mm-hmm.
and it's placing this game inside of real life. So you can go find these characters. You can go find Pokeballs. I'm sure there are numerous other things that are available to you that I haven't quite got to because I am only at level 2.
When this started, and this started Friday.
July 6th is when it was rolled out in the United States.
Oh, July 6th. All right. Mm-hmm. So you can play this anywhere in the U.S., no matter where you are in the United States. This game now exists.
Crap, I don't have any Pokeballs to kill this elephant-like creature.
Mm-hmm. Now think about what you just said.
Well,
just take a moment to think about what you just said.
You don't kill them, Wendy. You got to catch them all.
I don't know what I'm doing. I just know I throw balls at them, and I know I was outside Pokemon going.
By the way, that's why Roger Ailes is in trouble over at Fox News, but go ahead.
Oh, I missed you. I was outside doing the Pokemon Go, and a bird splatted on my breast.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So the animals are fighting back.
I think
like
they are.
Like you thought originally it was just you up against these virtual
animals.
Wait, was
that animals. Real life or was that in
no,
the...
No, it was real life. And
real
can
life.
I tell
wow.
you, I have never had a bird poop on me
yeah.
ever. I mean, maybe
until
when
now.
I was little, but it was like I'm wearing like a sheer top and it was right like...
Yeah, bullseye.
It was...
right?
It's probably a Pidgeotto got you.
Pidgeotto?
I had just caught him.
Oh, see? There you go.
Retaliation.
See, and, you know, I know people are getting in trouble for doing... Because I did find myself kind of walking in a zigzag. I was serpentining.
Yeah.
Serpentine?
Yeah.
From the In-Laws. What movie was...
That's the In-Laws. Serpentine, Shell. Serpentine.
Yes. I was serpentining, and I know people, like, are walking into the street, and there's a warning on this game to be careful, because you really kind of forget you're walking down the street.
Right.
Or the sidewalk.
People have done that since Friday. People driving are holding their phones up and looking for the Pokemon characters while they're driving and then crashing into stuff because they're
okay.
not focusing on the roads.
Does insurance cover that?
I don't think so.
All states?
I don't think they do.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I don't believe you're allowed to hatch the eggs if you're going above 20 miles an hour.
What does that mean?
Just let your mind wander, man.
What does that mean?
Come on. It's pretty self-explanatory.
All right, explain this to me, because it just popped up. We're not detecting your phone's orientation. Mm-hmm. Does it have to decide if it's straight or gay?
I don't think that. Yeah, that shouldn't play a part in this at all. 2016, come on. So this became so popular so fast, but when will people decide, okay, we've had enough of this? Does it last a week, a month, a year? How long
probably
will this
play? Probably when the kids go back to school, I would think, right?
I bet you're right. It honestly was cracking me up yesterday. I was driving home with the boys. Jim left for a Grateful Dead show Sunday morning. I haven't heard from him. He's okay at Alpine Valley somewhere.
How many Pokemon are there?
They got other pokey somethings.
Stuff's popping out all over the place.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine some colorful of the Deadheads playing this during the concert? Oh, that would crack me up. But so we were driving home last night from my sister's. We're in Brookfield, right by the Brookfield restaurant. There's a cow on the roof. A real cow, but not a Pokemon thing either. And there are kids on a bike, like a group of four kids. And my son, Michael, the window was down. He goes, "You guys playing Pokemon Go?" And they're, "Yes." Oh, how many? I mean, it's like everybody's being brought together. Wow. All the kids are out for the summer. This is a grand thing.
Yeah. It's brought our country together again.
You know what it is? It's a scavenger hunt.
It is.
It's a cleverly disguised scavenger hunt.
It really is. I mean, because you're going to landmarks and monuments and, you know, you're kind of walking around. I was interested in the story. I downloaded it. I'm now at level 2, so I have something to go home
level
and be
three
proud about. But you know what? I think maybe tonight I'll show it to my kids. And, you know, I got a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old. We'll walk around the neighborhood and we'll look for Pokies.
Right.
Mons.
It's fun.
Yes.
I know. I'm too old for this, and I'm too old to like Green
Nobody's
Day, but I don't care.
That.
Hi, Lisa. Are your kids into this?
Oh, my gosh. I have an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 14-year-old. I get a text message last week from my 16-year-old daughter saying, "Mom, I need to go on an adventure." And I said, "Well, sure. Go ahead. When?" "Oh, right now." Well, mind you, it was 12:15 at night.
Oh, good. That's
and
great.
I said, "Well, you know, did you know that it's 12:15 at night?" She said, "Yes, but it's very important. It's a life requirement."
No.
Yeah, the text goes on. And at one point I said, "Darcy, honey, any chance you're taking illegal drugs or alcohol right now?" You know, because I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
And the next thing I know, I thought we had just had a major tragedy in Park Ridge recently. And I thought, let the kids enjoy themselves. I'll stay up while they're out doing whatever this thing is that they're doing and check in with me every 10 minutes. And if you see a cop, duck, because you're going to get brought in for curfew.
Yep.
You know, but my thought again, Wendy, was just what I heard you say. They're out there. It's like playing ghost in the graveyard, you know, with your phone.
With your iPhone. You
know? Exactly. And, you know, they wanted to go by the cemetery because apparently, you know, there's special ones that come out in the cemetery at nighttime.
All right. Well, don't let them do that. That's too weird.
Well, I stayed up,
cool.
You know, and then my 18-year-old who's off to college in the fall, you know, he was then with them. And, you know, I let them do it. But then the other day they came to me and it was 3:00 in the morning. I'm like, okay, no.
At 3 a.m.
But there are throngs of kids standing in my driveway all going out pokey hunting at midnight the other night and every night since.
It's bringing the world together. It is.
Or is it the end of the world? You decide.
No, this is
not. You sure? All right.
Lisa, thank you for...
Good, clean fun, Wendy.
It's good, clean fun.
Are you playing it? Because you can download the app. It's pretty fun. And I haven't played Candy Crush in a week.
I did to see it. And I actually was sitting on the couch in my family room and there was a pokey there and I caught him.
And what do you win? You win valuable prizes,
you
obviously.
You win nothing.
I got to call Bill and Wendy and tell them.
All right, that's a valuable prize.
Me.
All right.
That is a valuable prize. Lisa, thank you so much.
Sure, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Diane wants to talk, but we have to take a break. Can we do 312-981-7200, continue in a moment?
Yeah, stay where you are, Diane. We'll get to you next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I want to be the very best.
Is this the Pokemon?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
The
Kevin
Pokemon
is lip-syncing it.
Yeah. Isn't this beautiful?
No. Is it Bon Jovi?
This is the song that Kevin's fiance is walking down the aisle to when they get married.
She's going to roll down in a Pokeball.
Right.
That would be awesome.
Yep.
Ryan, you have some news in the Pokemon Go world.
Well, what a lot of police are learning, police departments are learning, is that bad guys may be using this app to target unsuspecting victims, especially in some of these more secluded areas in O'Fallon, Missouri. Apparently, all these people kind of wandering around a gas station. Cops didn't really know what was up. Turns out that they were playing the game, and some suspected robbers noticed that and started started robbing them. So,
so it's dangerous, Ryan.
Well,
is what you're telling
us. You know, it's funny because at first the police they're not aware of what this app did or what it does. So they thought that the bad guys were actually using the app to lure these people into these secluded areas. But no, that's not it at all. They're just taking advantage of where some of these hot spots are, and you know, people obviously they're staring at their phones, so they're not, you know, they don't have their heads picked up. They don't know what they're looking at, and all of a sudden, you know, stick them up. Give me your wallet.
That's smart.
Or is it?
Well, it's mean.
It's
mean.
I don't necessarily know that the people who are playing this have a lot of money, but they probably have cool phones, obviously.
Well, people are texting. My son said the parks are filled with kids again because of Pokemon Go.
But they're not doing what you'd normally do in a park. They're just staring at their phones and walking into traffic. They're not
zombies.
Right.
They're essentially zombies at the park.
Yeah.
Someone else is saying, like, seeing The Walking Dead.
It is.
And Eric, one of your... your friend's sons got hurt playing it?
Well, I started playing it also, but so my wife this morning, she texted me at work saying that her friend's son was out playing and he tripped in a hole and he broke both of his arms and chipped both of his teeth.
Wow. What?
His front teeth, yeah.
All right, first of all, kids, when you're hitting the pavement, let go of the phone and protect your face.
Solid advice.
Right.
Oh my God! Yeah, both arms.
I guess he tripped. Yeah, and he's like the good kid of the family too. And he just started playing. He's a big Pokemon fan, and now he can't play.
Dad is heartbreaking. He broke both of his arms and can't even play anymore.
Sure,
I know. And by the time his arms get fixed, the game will probably be over.
I agree. I bet it's going to be short lived, Bill. I think you're right. Thank you, Eric.
So if you're him, you tell girls it was a sports injury, don't you? You don't lie. You say, you just say, yeah, I got hurt in sports.
You
I
do
was playing
lie.
Sports.
But you guys see what the future of this is. I mean, this
what is
this,
the future of
well,
this?
Well, I mean, this augmented reality. You know, to be honest with you, and I was talking with Dave Marzullo up here about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been exposed to something like this anytime we watch football, right? We know exactly where the first down marker is.
Oh, right.
It's put down there. It looks real. I mean, my kids have never been to an NFL game. They don't know that that line's not real.
You only see that line on television.
Exactly.
For people who don't know.
So, you know, when you're looking on your phone and what you see is real. You know, I mean, I'm sure that advertisers are going to, you know, all of a sudden you're going to walk in front of a monument and a Coca-Cola ad's going to pop up. You know what I mean?
Look at the Blackhawks games on the glass.
Oh, exactly. Right. Exactly.
That's another example.
It's this mix of the real world versus virtual reality, this augmented reality. And, you know, this could just be the beginning of the way we perceive life.
I am currently developing a Pokemon game for the Jewish community called Skokimon that I hope to have ready by this time next week. I'm very close to having that ready. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Bill, you need to take this a little more seriously.
I should take it more seriously. All right, a quick break and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, did you see this? This is disturbing on many fronts. It turns out that the population of fireflies, or do you say lightning bugs?
I say not lightning bugs.
I say lightning bugs more times than not also. The populations of them nationwide are diminishing rapidly. Isn't that disturbing?
You should see my backyard.
Do you have a lot of them?
Oh, my gosh. They've been going nuts over the last few days. It's like I've got strobe lights back there around 8 o'clock.
Can I tell you, there's a weird thing, Ryan, and it connects to what you just said. There are some years where they come a little bit later, and I don't understand the migratory practices of the lightning bug.
You're not an entomologist?
I'm not a...
herpetologist?
I'm none of those things.
Gynecologist?
I am a gynecologist. As a hobby, not as a profession. But I talked to my friend Harvey Klinger, who is a bug expert, and he was also baffled by this. But here's the thing about lightning bugs or fireflies that has always baffled me, and I don't understand this. You get your suburban types that flash, and then they don't flash for 5 seconds, and then they flash, and then they don't flash for 5 seconds. But then if you drive out to the country a little bit, you get the ones that flash every second or third second. So even though
they're mixed up, I think there are a few of those.
No, I have spent time. I know this sounds like I'm kidding, but I'm not. I have been to places where I see them. I'm not just driving down the road watching this. I've been in these like farm like communities where you see them flash, not flash. They're like on a speed timer as opposed to the ones by us in the suburbs. And I don't know what would determine that in a firefly to make it flash so much faster. Does that make sense?
Yes,
I hope it does.
It does, but I mean, are like they excited? Are they panting?
I don't know.
But you know,
it
like
might
a dog
have something to do with that. Maybe it does have something to do with it. I also noticed, like where I grew up, we had a creek behind some of the houses, and the ones that were down there by the creek, the same thing. Like they flashed with a lot more rapidity. They were flashing constantly, as opposed to those that were more inland that only flashed once every 6 seconds. And I don't know why. I don't know what it would be about them that would make them go faster or slower.
Well, now I have to do research.
No, I didn't tell you that to do research.
Well, I'm curious because is it like an urban setting? They're more stressed,
that's
so they flash quicker. And in the
I swear to you,
down by the creek.
That's what I imagined, and it's ridiculous to imagine that. Why would that be? Because they're just lightning bugs. What do they have to stress out over? But that's what I thought, is maybe there's more competition there by the creek for some weird reason as opposed to in a more suburban setting. I don't know why. You've noticed this too, though, right? It's not just me.
I just noticed that there are some that go nice and slowly.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know.
Very leisurely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they stay lit a little longer.
Right.
It's like slowed down, and then some are pulsating.
Right.
And I actually, driving home, I have bugs all over the front of the car because, you know, when you drive on the highway.
Yeah.
And I think we were just leaving Kentucky to get back into Illinois, and it was dusk, and a firefly or lightning bug hit our windshield, and it was glowing on the windshield for a second.
Right.
That was kind of cool.
It is cool, isn't it? It is cool. Now, did you have this going on in your neighborhood when you were growing up? Because there was a myth in Oak Forest, where I grew up, that if you caught 500 of them, you would catch them and freeze them, and then you'd send them to the government, and the government would send you a check for $100. But we don't know anyone who did that, but every summer we'd try to catch 500 of them, and it would drive our moms crazy. Enough with the lightning bugs in the freezer. What's wrong with you guys?
Okay.
You want $100.
I would not have let my kids put it in the freezer. Your mom actually let you?
Oh, yeah. We would always, it was always in a Tupperware container. We would just, you know, we would catch them, put them in the Tupperware container and freeze them. But there's no government agency giving kids $100 for 500 lightning bugs. But we, every year we tried this.
I never heard that. I just...
Last year was the first year I didn't do it. I was falling for it every year.
All right, Robert. What makes them light up? Do you know?
What makes them light up? Yeah, it's the breeding. The female is lighting up to let the male know she's either ready or not.
So what we're seeing there, what, like I said, when you're in more of like a farmland type community or by the creek.
Where I am, yeah, up here in Wisconsin. I'm out on a farm.
So all we're seeing there is just the female lightning bugs lighting up very, very quickly to say, I'm ready.
Well, according to Scientific American, it says several studies have shown that female fireflies choose mates depending on the specific male flash pattern. Higher male flash rates as well as increased flash intensity are more attractive to females.
And out here we have a lot of sweet clover.
Yeah.
And we have more lightning bugs than anywhere else, you know, that doesn't have it.
Really?
So they're really attracted somehow to the sweet clover and to all my wife's flower gardens around the little barn and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, and you're not noticing, like the story says that the populations are diminishing rapidly. You're not noticing any of that,
no.
Are you?
It's like you said that you had so many in your backyard. It was unbelievable, you know. That's what we got. We got, you know, lightning bugs that light up the whole area. But
oh, that's cool.
I think that's a phosphorus in them that lights up.
That's what I've always heard, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, just some information from the farm site.
Robert, thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you. When oxygen combines with calcium, adenosine triphosphate and the chemical luciferin in the presence,
that's
light
the,
is produced.
That's the devil's compound.
I know.
Luciferin. Did you have a kid in your neighborhood? We had a couple of kids who would do this. They would catch them in their hand, throw them on the sidewalk, and just smash them. And then you had
Smear them, like that streak
of yellow glow all over the sidewalk.
I've done that
for a couple of, was that you who did that in your neighborhood?
Not all the time, but I think I did it a couple
times.
From
time to time. And then another thing we used to like to do is we'd catch a bunch of them, and then we would release them in somebody's house so that their living room would light up, which sounds cool, but they were never happy when we would do something like that.
I thought you were sending them to the government.
That was our... I never heard that. That was like the biggest rumor every single summer. Is this the summer we're finally going to catch 500 of them and get $100? That was like an every summer thing. And we always fell way short. But there was no government agent. What were they going to do with them?
I would put them in an empty mayonnaise jar. And then you'd bring them in the house or leave them on the porch.
Them.
But that would be your little lantern. We wouldn't release them live in someone's house.
We used to try to figure out, because we would do that too, and we would try to figure out what food they would like. And there was
grass.
No right. We thought grass for a while. We would give them frankenberries for some weird reason. I don't know why we thought they would like frankenberries. Like, what would have led us to believe, yeah, that's the food that lightning bugs enjoy the most is frankenberry cereal. But they probably like frankenberries, wouldn't you think? Yeah, everybody
Who
likes
doesn't?
Frankenberries. Sure, give them some of those.
But there are different ways they light up. Some have
really?
Short glows and are primarily active at night. And then there are subterranean or semi-aquatic fireflies.
Subterranean, of course, meaning under the ground. But I've never heard of those. I only know your standard variety.
You don't see little patches of the ground lighting
no.
up?
No. Our lawn is lighting up. What's with that?
But the male...
Throw some more frankenberry down. Watch what happens.
Why are the males always prettier? Like, look at the male peacock.
Lions.
Yeah, they got the beautiful mane.
Right.
You know, the peahen.
Right.
The female peacock.
Yeah.
Is just brown.
Yeah.
Same with mallard ducks. And this the same with the lightning bugs.
Right.
That the higher male flash rates as well as the increased intensity have been shown to be more attractive to females in two different firefly species.
Why would that be, I wonder?
Because it's like, wow, look at that guy flashing.
Yeah.
He's hot.
Right. Right.
But it gets your attention. The males are prettier.
More showy.
Everything
right?
except the human race.
Yeah, that's the only one. Isn't that something? That's the only one.
You should start wearing makeup.
I'm going to start wearing some just to see what happens. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we have more show for you. Look at the phone lines. They're lighting up like fireflies, Wendy. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're telling you about a story at TakePart.com about the firefly population blinking out, as they say. The numbers are going down drastically. It says here, the insect's dilemma, the firefly's dilemma, first came to the world's attention at the 2010 International Firefly Symposium, Wendy. Did you attend that?
No.
Good luck getting tickets. If you think Hamilton tickets are hard to get, try getting tickets to that International Firefly Symposium. Where researchers from 13 nations presented evidence of firefly population declines and declared, and I quote here, an urgent need for the conservation of their habitats. So the numbers of fireflies are going down, and they're going down fast. Because everybody's trying to catch them and send them in to the government to get $100.
I would like to know if any listener has ever heard of that, because I really don't. Somebody was just fooling you.
I think so, but we fell for it. We tried it every year.
All right. Well, occasionally you'd smear them on the sidewalk, and I know that's terrible, but when you're a kid, you think it's kind of cool.
Yes.
Peg, what'd you do?
Oh, well, we did used to smear them on the sidewalk, as you said, and that was cool. You could see how long a trace you could make with it. But all of us girls used to pinch out the light and put it on our ring finger and pretend it was our diamond ring.
Ew.
Wow.
It was all gooey,
Didn't
wasn't
they have
it?
Rogers and Hollins when you were a kid?
No, they probably didn't then, but that's what we did anyway.
Oh, no. That's ugly.
And I'm not a person who likes gooey animal stuff, but that didn't freak me out at all.
Yeah, for some reason, fireflies are
a diamond ring, you know?
Well, boy, that you wish it would glow like that.
Right.
Even
right.
if you hated bugs,
thanks,
for some reason you were immune. The firefly was just too adorable with its light-up capabilities. You didn't even count it as a bug.
I know, but when it would take away its light-up capabilities, and it looks kind of like a little bit of a roach, a skinny roach with wings.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Mike wants to talk to you. This is specifically for Bill. Hi, all Mike. Right. Talk to Bill.
Oh, and hello, Wendy. You're free to observe and marvel.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. And hi, Bill.
Hi,
I
Mike.
Think I have got the answer to the Frankenberry obsession.
Yeah, why do the fireflies enjoy Frankenberry so much?
Well, they consider Frankenstein to be a fellow electrical-based critter.
Right.
With the bolts in his neck.
Right. True.
And now you've got those. You got the bolts at play, and you also have the fact that lightning bug, lightning bolt,
yes.
Usain Bolt. You can see where I'm going with this.
I do, and it makes sense to me.
I'm astounded and amazed,
wow.
Actually, Mike.
Well done, sir.
I figured in that order, and I appreciate that. And one other thing, you may not know this, few do, but as little just beyond a pupa and a larva, which the difference of which I can't tell you, mm-hmm. but it's kind of required watching for the little bitty baby bugs to watch Woody Allen movies. There's just a species obsessed with it. So they're also then, pretty much into a pathological fear of death.
Oh.
So it's the fear of the dying of the light. That's why they flash so much.
This all makes sense. You should be teaching a class, Mike.
Are you a philosopher?
I'm on my way to teach right now at Oakton.
Oh.
In the philosophy department at Oakton Community College.
There's woods around there and a lot of little critters. Oops, there's one of my students calling in.
Oh, be careful.
I was talking with you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. That was your call. Sue knows why the males flash so brightly and the females don't. Hi, Sue.
Is this me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's you.
Okay, no, that wasn't what I was calling about. What I was calling about was why you asked why the females are so mundane.
Yes.
And in color. And it's because the males are colorful to attract the females, but the females have to blend in with their environment and become kind of camouflaged so that they can nest or, birth their young, like a deer. Hold on just a second.
All right. Hold on, Wendy.
I'm holding it.
Just wait for a minute.
A deer.
Thank you for holding. You're listening to Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you for holding. Thank you for holding. It's super bad.
Ah, Sue, Wendy was messing with your head. Go ahead.
Anyway, basically what happens is they need to blend in with their environment so that they aren't their camouflage, so that they can raise their young.
That makes total sense.
It
like
does.
The the female duck is brown and gray like the nest.
They're gonna nest in a forest, they're gonna nest by a tree. I walk dogs every day and the dog found a duck nest and I would never have seen it, but the dog found it.
Because of scent, not sight.
Right. For a dog, yes. For a human, no. But I did watch that nest until all the baby ducks were gone.
Oh, cool.
Now it makes sense.
Well, thank you for calling, Sue.
Okay, thanks.
Have a good one.
She thought she was on hold. You know that, right?
Thank you very much for calling.
It's very convincing.
Your call may be recorded.
Press 2 for Spanish. Press 3 to talk to Frankenberry. All right, we'll take a quick break. I think Ro is back. I know Brian Noonan filled in all last week, but I'm pretty sure Ro and Anna are back today. We'll find out next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.